program, I'll be a full-time employee.
June 12th, that's fine.
Ann Shutter, Walla Walla.
Lisa Wright, CORE.
Bob Cordy, CORE, the Dells.
Ramiro Zindel, CORE, John Day.
Ben Hausman, CORE, Bonneville.
John Day, I'm CORE, Fishfield Unit, amongst my colleagues.
Nathan Zorich, CORE, Portland District.
Bjorn Vanderloo, CORE, Fisheries Field Unit.
Catherine Foster, ODFW.
Eric Van Dyke, Oregon.
I'm George Brown from VPA. I've never been to one of these meetings, so just, you know, get the feel for it.
Scott Dickey, VPA.
Garrett Fredrickson, Fisheries.
Back.
Howard Takata, ODFW.
Tucker Jones, ODFW.
Thanks. How did that go? Hey, Russ, since you're on the phone, can you hear us? Did that work out?
Well, it was going okay, not the best, but okay until that last person.
Okay.
And then they were going on.
All right, yeah, they weren't sitting in front of a mic, so they're moving up to the
table.
Well,
that's the reason,
yeah. Yep. All right, and on the phone, I heard Russ, I heard Dave Wills from the service. Who else we got? Okay.
Trevor Condor,
Noah. Trevor, get over here.
McNary, SMP.
Greg Woody.
Greg.
Tom Iverson with Yakima Nation.
Hey, Tom. Anybody else? All right. And Christine Peterson from BPA just walked in the door. All right, well, let's, anything to add on to this month's agenda?
I have a couple things. I have McNary, SMP, Rosanna's called in for, and I think she and Gary may have some comments on developing a fish passage plan change form.
Okay.
And then we had some emails yesterday from Trevor wanting to talk about hazardous material at Ice Harbor, so I assume he may lead that discussion because I don't have anything written, so.
Okay. Anybody else?
Yeah, one of the LOPs.
It's on there.
Mm-hmm.
It's on the agenda.
Is it on the agenda? Okay, I just had a chance to go through all of it.
Number five.
Okay. I wanted to add something about potential for Bradford Island early dewatering.
Bradford Island dewater, okay. All right, anything else? How about, let's approve.
Mark.
Who's that?
Has joined the conference.
Mark Plummer, probably.
Is that Mark Plummer?
Mark Plummer, did you just join?
Yes, I did.
Okay, thank you.
Alrighty. Okay, so let's go approve May FBOM minutes. Any comments on the minutes from May? If not, I'd like to approve those. All right. I don't see anybody. I see thumbs up, so we're good.
Eyeballs.
All right, so those are approved. Let's get right into the action with Walla Walla's action items. Go ahead, Ann.
Okay. Obviously, the first one is a deferred action that Carl will be getting back later to talk about the mechanical screen and the collection channel. The second item was the lower granite use of John Day screens. I forwarded out to folks a lot of the historic question and answer that the project went through with some of our engineering staff, as well as the update. So I don't know if anybody, Bill, I believe, asked for that. I don't hear Bill on the phone, but I think it's pretty clear what we have. Folks will recall that at this point, we have the go-ahead for spring fish to have those screens in the B and C slots. Would anticipate potentially doing some gate well dipping in A next spring early on. We don't have the official thumbs up from FPOM for B slot for summer fish, and so that's, I believe, why Bill asked me to pass out the information again. So I guess kind of would like some guidance here on that. I don't see him here, so I suspect we need to kind of defer that unless anyone else has comments. But recall, the Corps' interest is at the project to have a couple spares available that can be readily swapped when a screen goes down. And so at this point in time, we're a little limited with these John Day screens, and that's why we've been doing the gate well dipping over the last year or so.
Just a thought, I think I brought up last time the idea of using those as just C-slot.
This is Sherry, I'm having a really hard time hearing.
Using those as a C-slot only, and then converting some of the existing granite screens to as a spare, using those as a spare, so they can go anywhere then. And I didn't, you know, that was a thought that I hadn't heard anybody really talk about. Basically you would just leave the...
Hey, this is Tom. I can't hear very well either. Can you guys move closer to a mic, maybe?
I'm about a foot away from it.
Yeah, I don't know if this
we're
system...
We're having a hard time on the phone.
Hey, Tom, is this system hooked into the mics, into that spider? Because that people on the phone can't...
Press realize. This button, get close, talk, and they'll hear you.
It's not working.
I don't know. I look like an IT guy.
Yeah, no. You do.
So,
I have a pants on. That's why you're confused.
This is
I know.
Glasses.
Yeah. Must be.
All right. Well, we'll use the mics and hopefully you can hear us. But there's a spider set up, and I don't know if that's the only thing
mics
grabbing.
Are hooked to the spider.
They are.
Yeah. So if you talk in the mic, talk closely. They should be able to hear you. It's not the best system. It is what it is.
Okay, so Sherry, I think that was Gary Fredericks making comments. He was making a suggestion that maybe as you started a season, you would start with the John Day screens in the C-slot, and then you would have other screens as your backup. That said, I think the uncertainty of the frequency with which some of these gets swapped, it has kind of been the issue. I think that's not an unreasonable request. But as you pull that up and put something else in, then the next time you need one, if it's an A slot that goes out, that's the one that would go in.
You don't have just the designated screens that are spare screens that you would use. And if, say, you had a C slot, an old John Day screen that went out, you pull it up, you put that in, you fix the John Day screen, you put it back down in the C slot where it was, and your spare, which is an original or granite screen, would then be available to go anywhere.
Well, I think what I'd need to do is talk you through the logistics of that, because then you have quite a bit of labor spent on
up and down,
et cetera, which the projects are not likely to find preferable. But I don't mind taking this back and having some further discussion on it.
Yeah, I mean, all I'm saying is that if you have a spare screen set, that be the original granite, so they can go anywhere. And but that was the idea of bringing the John Day screens up, I thought.
No, they don't have spares.
You don't have any spares.
Fix the old one.
I thought that was the idea.
We didn't fix the old one, but I believe that now by bringing these up, we do have at least one or two spares. And so it would be possible to put these three in C slots to start the season. You could put them in units where you only run during the spring. And then, obviously, as you get towards later in the summer, you have a lot of spares if you're not potentially running those units.
I mean, I just read through this stuff. Bill, are you on the phone yet?
So this is a little different guidance than I went back from the last meeting and gave the project, because I don't recall this being discussed or with you folks. I thought that for spring we were okay in B or C, but it was undefined beyond that.
Right. That's okay. I'm just saying that you avoid the issue of the concern, particularly with A-slot, because the one thing that bothers me in reading through that was the gate wall dipping that folks were talking about doing for an entire season to see what... That's what Martin had recommended.
Oh, no, we're never going...
That looked to me like a lot of excess...
we'll never go there.
You know, I think from a hydraulic standpoint, you could probably determine what the risk was without having to do a lot of
gate wall dipping. Yeah, well, you might recall that we're, Bill, time
Bill, I'm, Bill, I'm stepping into your area here.
We're talking about the gate wall dipping. We're just giving an update. I sent out that information on the John Day screens.
Mm-hmm.
Gary was kind of offering his two cents on that maybe moving forward, the best way to start the season would be to have the John Day screens as your fixtures and C slots of the units. So after the last meeting, it was my understanding that we were good for Springfish to have those in either B or C slots.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that. I'm oversimplifying. I'm not saying that B is not okay. What I'm saying is just that once you have those in those slots, that if you have a spares that you need to move into A or wherever, that those be over Lower Granite screens.
There's just a lot more interchange than what we have tracked here. You know, something goes down, they have the spare, they throw it in, and it's so that we don't have a lot of downtime on the units, and so there's the difference between scheduled and forced outages, and that's the way people get credits with BPA back at the project as well. And so anything where a screen goes out, you know, that's a forced outage that wasn't planned, and so that kind of counts against the project. Scott probably better understands that than I do, but in terms of operating, then, for them, obviously the greatest flexibility is to be able to have a spare and put it in any slot. If they've got to pull a screen out of another slot to move it because it's a slot, then you got to take a second unit down, you got to take the time to pull those out, you got to move them, and then you put these screens back in B or C. And so what they're trying to avoid, it's not that they'd be unwilling to start the season with these in C slots, is the ability, particularly in the spring, to utilize these. And so what Gary was getting into as you walked in, Bill, was just unnecessarily handling in order to find out whether it was okay to ever put these in A slots for the spring. And I didn't, apparently he had some discussions with Martin, but
In an email, it was written. That was written.
So most of the emails that went out were all things from 2012 before we went into our detail. I went back with history and brought up everything, which maybe wasn't appropriate. But our plan for 2014 was that we would go in the first 2 weeks of April when there wasn't that many fish, do the gate well dipping on B so that we had very little impact. And my take home after the last meeting is that would be our path forward for 2015 for the A slot. Again, we have holdover fish that are moving through there. We can sample low numbers of fish and try to understand if there's any difference. Now for the summer and
so you want to 2015, we want to put one of the John Day screens in A slot.
Right.
And test it.
Right.
That seems reasonable, doesn't it?
And I guess.
I mean, they look good in it being C.
In B and
so
C,
far.
Yeah. I was just.
Why not test
just trying to get away from the whole issue of being concerned about
the conference.
I thought that you would have a spare or a couple of spare screens that you could just have sitting when you had a problem with the screen. If those were originally Lower Granite screens, you could put them wherever you wanted to put them.
It is where you start the season. You can potentially do that. I just don't think we understand the frequency with which screen swapping goes on in season.
Okay.
I mean, we can dig into that, but right now, you know, they grab whatever the spare is and put it in. So as soon as you
have joined the conference,
and then it stays in. Is what you're saying? It doesn't come back out and go back over to the
because it's a lot of extra manpower, train work. So it'd be considerably more expensive. You're probably talking a day and a half's worth of.
That's your
labor,
sequence. I didn't realize
labor
the
and equipment
was
type thing.
Okay.
The one other item that I had is that we had talked about allowing that for springfish, but we had said we wanted to push out until I provided more information how we wanted to better address summer fish, because summer fish are problematic in terms of finding a good time to sample when there isn't very. If we wait until after the peak of the run is passed, which is what we did last year, then we don't get a good feel in terms of sample size numbers for summer fish. We can try that again this year. But anyway, my understanding from the last meeting is that I was sending out some of the information so people could reinforce all the history from the last 2 years in terms of what had been done and where we were at, and that we could have some discussion on whether there was a need for summer fish as well to verify for B slot. And so that's why this was a action item on the agenda.
Okay. And you're asking the group now whether there is any testing needed for summer fish.
Right, because the information was sent out. I feel like people had a chance to review it. We've now We did summer fish, didn't have with B slot last year, and then we did spring fish. And it wasn't as clear with the low sample sizes for summer fish, and so that's why we wanted to go back for spring. And so it seemed to me like, you know, for B and C slots, we kind of were ready to check the box, but we weren't until I sent out this information for people to review. So that was my assumption, and I guess I'm open for comments that people have to the contrary.
Don't sample summer.
It's up to Bill. I mean, I think that hydraulically you've proven these screens are pretty similar to John Day screens. I know there's some structural members in there that are going to be that causes a little bit of.
But then they went back and opened those up, so we actually think that they may be better.
The holes we did, chamfered and opened the holes to 25% of that, although the framework itself in those screens was a
modifier.
And I don't think you can modify that.
Yeah, the big X's
right.
Versus just the rectangles.
So there was a little bit of difference there, but to me it's pretty clear that those screens are very similar to Laura Grant screens. And it seems to me that you may do more damage with the gable than you would with the screens themselves. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, for summer fish, for B and C, we're fine with using these screens. The only question we have is the A slot.
Right. Higher velocity
slot. So we'll need to have more discussion as we're heading towards setting up the project for next spring, whether people will be comfortable and what we might do sampling wise.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if it's worth the course time, if you guys can just make it work that begin every season you put these slots, put all these screens in B and C slots, and then your extras are Laura Grant, then you don't need to do an evaluation. It's up to the Corps if they want to spend the time and money to do an evaluation to check the box that these can be used in A slots. I would just go back and take a look at how critical that is.
Okay.
If it is, then we'll figure out how to get this done. If not, just do
so,
what Gary suggested, and I think that takes care of it for us.
Okay. And then with that assumption, Tom, would be if we have them in either a B or C, and we get into the peak of runoff that maybe runs 5 or 6 weeks, and we start swapping, that if at some point after swapping those are only available to go into an A for, like, say, 2 weeks, then people would be okay with that? Is that part of that assumption? Or
it could be. I mean, let's take a look at how often that actually happens. If that happens, like, once every 50 years, I'm going to let it slide. If it happens every second year, then we'll need to talk about how we can make ourselves comfortable that using these in A slots would be a good idea. I mean, the only species I'd be super worried about would be sockeye. So, and I don't even know how you do a sockeye evaluation because it's usually during
the middle of the run, and then you run the risk.
You don't want to do it.
Yeah, your gable dipping during the peak of the run, which is not ideal. So,
you're probably going to damage a lot more sockeye with that gable dipping than the screen well.
Yeah, you're going to have a fun time trying to discern which is from the gable dipping and which is from the screen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would just go back and take a look at how big of an issue this is to see if we need to keep pushing this molehill into a mountain or not.
Yeah, I think you're hydraulically looking at it. It's probably a better way to do it than biologically in this case.
Okay, thank you.
213, Lisa.
Okay, just to remind everybody, little
speaker.
Sorry.
What was Mike's voice, guys? I don't hear you on the speaker. I hear your voice from over there. No one else is here.
You should just do it all. You have enough
phone.
Yeah. But it's not coming on the speaker either.
Yeah, you're not using it either.
Okay, so at last FPOM, we talked about Little Goose. It came up that they were installing GDACs to control their spill bays. And the final step of the process was to calibrate the spill gates by adjusting them incrementally, which meant a modification from the FPP pattern. It happened on May 14th and 15th. They adjusted bays 2 through 6 for a few hours, about a tenth of a foot. There was no TDG impacts, and 30% spill was maintained, and Little Goose is now on full GDAX automatic control. The only other two projects that don't have full GDAX control are the Dalles and Lower Granite, and there's no real indication that either of those will happen anytime soon. So, if anybody has any more specific questions?
Okay. Are we ready to move to the next action item then?
Yes.
Hey, Tom?
No, yes.
Dave Wills.
Yeah, that's Dave Wills. I guess you said that the Dalles and Granite did not have GDACs. And I don't know if you said why or not, but if you could.
So from the information that I got regarding the Dells, maybe, I don't know if Bob knows anymore, but essentially they have no GDAX control. They actually have a separate panel that they adjust the gates with. And then Lower Granite has partial GDAX, and it says position indication only, and I don't think that there's a real need to go to full automatic control there. But I think they seem fine with what they have. But that's if you wanted more specifics, I can get it for you, but that's what I have.
No, I just kind of wanted a general idea and see if anybody else there is concerned or not. I'm kind of clueless.
All right, everyone's shaking their heads.
Okay, so we'll leave you out there clueless for a little while, Dave, and move on.
Well, if nobody else there is concerned, then I'm fine.
Okay, so you're fine.
Are you fine?
Dave's now fine.
Are you fine?
Oh, yeah, I'm great.
Okay.
I'm awesome, Dave. Too bad you can't be here. No.
I am too, actually, now.
The Rice Krispies are delicious.
Yeah. Wall last update. Russ, I believe you're on the phone. Hope you had a chance to review the handout that went out specific to Lower Granite Adult Passage and the operation of Unit 1. You'll recall that we've had a FPB change form. We've vetted that at the last two FPOM meetings. I think as we approach summer, we're hoping to have this one kind of uniformly agreed to, and so I guess I would like to push it over to you and see how you feel now that we've provided some of the input for those that were supporting this change. You and or Tom, I don't recall if you were also
I was not, and I needed to see the data to see if I was comfortable with Genform as well, and Russ, I'll let you take the lead since you've been the strongest supporter or non-supporter of this.
Yeah, appreciate putting the information together, and I actually had Dave Bennett at Fish Passage Center look at the information as well, and it's one is that it definitely appears from the data that going to Unit 1, which is logical since it is the priority unit, and it sets up good entrance conditions on that south shore ladder, that we do have more adult entrances and passage, but we also have a whole lot of entrances and then turnarounds in the ladder. And once again, it appears that temperature is the main issue, and that at times going to the Unit 1 operation will get more fish to enter the ladder and sometimes pass, but the real issue is temperature. And so Dave Benner also drafted some other options that could be implemented if we get into adult fillet. But my position hasn't changed as far as not supporting the change form, in that the way it reads is that if we get to an adult count differential of a certain magnitude, we're going to automatically implement a turbine one operation. And because when that turbine one, when the cap one was welded at the upper end of the 1% operating range, it can only operate at that point now. And when flows in Snake River are below 36 KCFS, that means that we're getting into the point where if we operate turbine one, we can't fully implement the juvenile protection measures that are planned. And so it's one of those that's kind of semantics, but that we do not support the change form as automatically implementing these options in a specific order. That one, we all hope that the efforts Corps have taken to address the temperature issue, and we need to talk about the pump issue sometime today.
Yes, we will.
We'll resolve the issue. We won't have an adult delay differential. But if we have it, Idle Fish and Game is still not in support of the change form to automatically implement these actions in this order. And we are likely, in the event that we do have an adult delay, to support some of those actions, some of those options, and likely similarly in the order, but we just don't want them to be automatic as part of the fish passage plan. That this is our fish passage plan. If we see an adult delay, we're, at this time of year, we're going to reduce juvenile protection to improve ladder entrance conditions, which may or may not solve the problem of adults passing. So hopefully we don't get into it, but we're not going to support the change form. And we will likely, if we get into those situations, support a lot of the actions. But we just don't want it to be automatically part of the fish passage plan.
Okay. Any other agencies or tribes have comments?
So yeah, we reviewed the paper. One thing we would note, it would be good to have the temperature data matched up with that instead of having to try to go back to the TMP website and try to parse all that out. It was not a super easy task to do because I think, as Russ hit upon, temperature is probably the overdriving factor and the hydraulics is a secondary factor. And as Russ stated, hopefully, I believe the Wawa is planning to have something done, I don't know if this winter, but by next year. It says to be only implementable for a year, and then hopefully we wouldn't be doing this operation.
That's correct.
So I would do more of, like, I think this is a great list to have ready to go if something does happen this year. But actually, year 3.1 is going to be very illuminating about what kind of operations we're going to do this year anyways. Basically, that's the emergency pumps we're talking about having up at the project. Depending how that goes, will determine kind of, that's going to be our, kind of our first line of defense. And then we move from there is kind of my strategy. And I think some of the things that are in the change form is stuff we'll discuss if we have to. But I'm with Russ. I don't think I want to put this down in stone quite yet. I'd rather get the problem fixed before we need to start actually writing operational plans, because otherwise we're going to have to just then go back and rewrite it later. And as much fun as it is to do change forms, I prefer not to do them unless it's going to be something for more than a couple years. So. Yeah, no, I think it's a great start. If we start matching temperatures, it'd be great. And then we'll have to give TMT something to do in August.
Yeah, not going to comment. I think that those of you agencies and tribes that participate in Snake River are aware that there has been some policy involvement on this issue with the Nez Perce tribe, states of Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. NIMS, Richie Graves, has come out fairly definitively and stated that they will be supporting in favor of adults versus juveniles if we're faced with the decisions that we had last year at a policy level. So, you know, just to clarify that for folks, again, the Corps via both the PD, between both planning and ops, and it was actually formalized, Randy Chong. We did have kind of a short paper that was provided both at the policy level, USV Oregon, as well as to that same Snake River group that just kind of talked through those issues and seems to have been informative. And so we feel like, yeah, the issues are pretty well laid out, and we will talk about the pumps. They are on here later for an update, and probably let Greg do that, but we are on that page. We agree that they're likely to change the situation from last year, and to reconfirm, Tom, that there are long-term actions we anticipate that CRIFM-funded PDT will take and be available for 2015. So, and then the only thing that will be left for 2016 then would be the element that comes as a result of the JFF upgrade, and that's the availability of the cooler water, the excess water from the collection channel that becomes available then. Yep. So, I don't know if anybody else has any comments.
I have one. I want to just say that I really appreciate everybody's help and everybody's work on this change form. And everybody's contribution, because I think it moves the ball forward and on looking at some operations of how to improve hydraulic conditions in the Lower Granite tail race. And I'm regretful that we didn't have the new tail race model ready to be able to test these proposed changes. And I'm still looking forward to that. Sooner or later, that model will be working okay, and we can see how to turn that upstream eddy, that powerhouse eddy, around, and the easiest way to do that and how to do it at what flow levels when there appears to be some kind of tail race or blockage of adults, and you still have water temperatures in the ladder of okay temperatures. I think that could still occur just like it's occurred at Goose. So thanks a lot for everybody's working on that, and I hope we can moving it forward is working on the model and verifying whether these will be a way to turn that upstream eddy around for adults.
And one follow-up question, Tom Lors. Lower Granite Turbine Unit 1, what is the schedule again to get it turned back into a Kaplan?
Yeah, I will double. The last time I brought that, we're scheduled to go out in September of 2015 and be out for roughly a year.
So from 15 on, we're not even going to have Unit 1 anyways.
It'll be 17 to be the first.
So yeah.
Correct.
So this change form would basically be out the window after September 15 anyways, because we wouldn't even have Unit 1 to be available.
And it was okay. Made to be something that would just be, honestly, yep. I think Lisa sent out one version of this and said through 2016, but I noticed that it really would have been just, you know, we got the long-term change we expect in 2015. It was really a blanket for this year,
yep.
Just to not, you know, have defined path forward. And this has been good discussion. We have two issues on the table. We believe that we're able to better address the temperature issue, assuming things go well there with what we have planned. The tail race issue, we haven't done anything to address, as Bill has mentioned, so we'll have to wait and see how this plays out. We're done.
Ann, question on that. Is it worth writing ourselves a note, essentially, adopting the change form that says these are things you could do? You know, rewrite it to say this is the potential list. Put in the FPP for this year. We can always take it out later.
Well, it will never officially go in. I think what we'll have it as is a sidebar for TMT. Obviously, we have people saying they're not necessarily in season going to disagree that these are the best places to go. They don't want to endorse people knee-jerking and starting to implement operations before we've had the opportunity for some discussion. That's reasonable.
Potentially change the change form to say this is a list of things to do, not adopt as these are the things you will do.
I sort of agree that all the paperwork for change forms for something that's never going to get printed is like, why do it?
I was just thinking, how do we keep track of our notes for ourselves?
Well, we have the draft change form that hasn't been approved, and that's out on the FPOM website, and that doesn't exactly just go away. The action at this point is that it's not approved, and so we have that change form as not approved. We can always grab that change form to initiate our discussions. So we have to keep all that as part of the administrative record stuff related to the buyout.
I think we're
good here. Go back to Portland, maybe.
Okay.
One last thing, if I could add a point here.
Oh, sorry.
I was a little concerned about how you stated what the definitive action might be in the view of Richie Graves at this point.
Okay.
So pitting one age against the other is not an acceptable methodology for moving forward in this case, I think. So just know that if you're going to favor or prioritize adults over juveniles, that'll create some harbor.
Well, it's not appropriate for me to speak for NIMS, but just recalling the TMT discussions last year, we have very low numbers of juveniles being collected and passing our facility at the time we're implementing these operations. And so there wasn't anyone that brought to the table strong evidence of impact to juveniles. And so I think that was the message, is that, okay, we do not have in the powerhouse a lot of juveniles passing on this side of the river. The presumption is we have a spill program, and for those that are moving, they're moving through there because we're not seeing large numbers being collected. You're probably also aware that the juveniles that move through the Snake River in the summer are largely sub-yearling Chinook. And once we get past early July, there's a tendency for those fish to not really reinitiate in large numbers, remigrating until we start getting cooling temperatures in the fall, i.e. generally early September. Last year it wasn't until mid-September. So with large numbers of fall Chinook anticipated, concerns by both states and tribes that we do nothing to impact those, if you go through a risk analysis, I think that's what was being vetted there, is that the risk analysis would show that you're better off protecting all these adults that are the long run because your potential for impact on juveniles is so small.
Yeah, I think the main point is that we don't like making these choices either.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to make a choice.
Yeah,
that's all.
I guess my point to that would also be that, you know, what the buyout said and what the remand ordered for summer spill was protections for fish. And that's what I'm referring to when I say that we shouldn't pit one against the other at this stage. So if we could try to balance, that would be a better alternative.
That's what we're trying to do.
Understood. So just wanted to bring that point forward.
Anything else on that? If not, I'd like to move on into Portland's updates, 2.2. The first one is the Willamette Falls locks gate operation. We had that discussion last FPOM about can we exercise it and can we open the gates when fish are present. And Ben was discussed back at the project what our options are. And also the state of Oregon did provide the run timing and the best time to actually use that locks for the exercise schedule, which I know you're developing, but what do you have for an update?
Well, I think we went from, I don't have it in front of me, but I think the run timing showed about 3 months window. It would be good or less bad as far as fish presence and what they need to do there, but they're not going to be able to go, obviously, from monthly PMs to three times a year. What they can do is we'll go down there now in the short term until we get whatever figured out operationally or otherwise and send biologists down there every time we exercise, which will let us check for fish. It'll let us salvage fish if there is anything trapped. We're trying to figure out basically what, you can't leave the gates open. Basically, you have to supply a pool for the mill, so leaving the gates open is not an option. So you basically have seven gates, two of which stay closed to maintain a channel of water. We can probably do some exercising of the middle gates more frequently, where we don't have any ability to trap fish. They can't come up from the tail race normally. And then come up with a protocol for both how we exercise the gates, order, and that sort of thing, as well as the potential to have, all these gates have sluice gates, more or less, so that the gates themselves open and there's sluice gates that are automated. So technically, fish can always get in there, so it's not a new problem per se, but no matter what we do with exercise, those gates are in auto and they open and fish can get in. They can also get out for that matter, but we can probably automate those middle gates so they can flush water through on some frequency. So if we get fish in there per se, either noticed or not, we could have some cycle where we put water through all those gates that can move them through to tailwater at whatever frequency we think is necessary, a few hours or something. But we need feedback from folks here to know what do we want to see as far as how often they need to open, how long do they need to stay open, and that sort of thing. But we're going to go down there, chief of maintenance, myself, and some lock folks, and just run through the process and see what makes sense to develop protocol for order of gates, and then put some water through there in the scenario that we're talking about to see if that would work for moving fish through. And then we'll just see if folks want to give feedback here as to duration and timing. That's kind of all we can do.
Any comments? Well, I guess drive on, Lyle.
Okay. Well, yeah, we'll go down there. I think we're going down the first week in July, and we'll do it. I'll report back how it goes, and we'll get
come up with the protocol was.
It just seems like probably the logical outcome of that would be for you to develop a plan that, and then maybe some variables in there for people to choose, but
sure.
You guys understand the what can and can't be done at those lock, that lock better than anybody else. So.
Yeah, and it's not, I mean, nobody really wants to go down there and potentially trap fish, but the alternative is oil leak from those gates, which right. is going to be worse. So there's a balance, and we don't have, unfortunately, any data to show here's what happens when you let them sit for 6 months, because they never have sat for 6 months. It was an active lock up until just recently.
Right.
So.
Right.
I'll report back next month.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Sure.
I think we need to take a field trip.
If you could get that data out, and maybe we can bring some people down there to actually see that operation.
Sure.
Maybe even take you to the museum there. It's pretty cool.
Are you leaving at the museum? He is that old?
Yeah. You're almost 60, so we can leave you there. Yeah. You could be a display. I said, now that you're almost 60, you could be a display there.
Thanks. That's harassment.
That'll make you think about disclosure the next time.
There's a steam shovel, picture of a steam shovel in there, too. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, I do remember those.
Didn't you operate one?
Okay, so moving on to oil spills, speaking of oil, Tom asked me to find out how I can get him on the notification distribution. So when the Corps has a oil spill, they do call CritFix Public Affairs, Diane Barton, I think is her name.
Okay.
And you can have her call you, but I can also get you on an email. I asked him to put you on the email distribution list, so if you're not getting those emails. Also, if it's after
has
hours.
Has there been an oil spill since?
I don't think in the last month. I haven't, so I don't know if that means
I'm not on the email. You haven't had a oil
knock on wood. But we notify CritFi after hours, so
okay, good.
It goes through that process. So if you don't get that email, get a hold of me. And then our split flows at the Dalles. Do you want to talk to that now, John, or you want to wait? Split flows.
Just the trip.
Yeah, the trip, the model trip.
The model trip was scheduled for the 25th through the 29th of August to piggyback on the Turbo Survival Program work. And we are trying to figure out how to
Bob for I hear that Bob Cordy is the only guy going, and he's going to be holding the camera for the rest of us.
That's correct. Yeah, we'll be looking through the camera, instructing Cordy to move to the left.
Right, he's like a puppet. Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, we're trying to develop that as far as more discussion.
We can
carry that on at this
A lot of trouble with trying to get money, travel.
Yeah. Well, Bob, you have a GoPro, don't you?
Hmm? There you are.
We'll just stream you on the internet.
Just put it on his forehead.
Maybe you can buy me one.
Really? Without all your windsurfing foot videos? Come on now.
So the trip is the 25th of August. How does that mesh with the one? Is the Granite trip in August, too?
I think that's 18.
No.
Okay. So you guys can do 2 weeks in Mississippi. Excellent.
Is there a date?
Not that I've read.
George said the other day on the conference call, goes, are you making it then the 18th?
No, I've not heard of a date yet.
Yeah, I think there is some news on that, but it's not well known yet. So.
All right, well, plan on the 25th, the week of the 25th.
We're still coordinating this trip.
It's
not set up yet.
So John, when you get a firmer date, let me know, because last week of August,
Wall of money for the port?
I sent you an email, but you didn't see me yet.
Yeah, those would be the
there
names,
we go.
But the logistics of getting
we're
it all
working
set.
On that right
Enjoy
now.
That.
All right.
Drink lots
of
water.
August is great. It'll be quirky, right?
Yeah.
All right, so tentatively, we're going to plan for that week. We'll try to get the money mipper to the proper people through the whatever way we can. It might be through Walla Walla or Portland. And once that gets more details get finalized, we'll get those out.
Yeah, we'll have more discussion about the split flows.
This afternoon. Or earlier.
Yeah, regarding that trip, I suggested that all the people involved get together next Monday afternoon at a conference call. Try to work it out, so maybe we'll
We'll know more by then or after that.
Okay. All right, let's move on to updates. Walla Walla's Lower Granite generator water pump update.
Okay, well, we have Greg on the phone, and I think he can give us some date information. Just reiterate a little bit earlier, the PDT.
Yeah, I'm having a hard time hearing the response from everybody. But the PDT has looked at a number of different options on the pump situation there at Lower Granite. They finally decided the best option would be installing a generator and up to about three different pumps, depending on the pump volume and stuff like that. And these would be pumps that are submerged immediately below the diffuser 14 invert on the face of the dam there. That would be pumped up from at least 30 feet below this point where we saw last year, which was below the level where the hot water hit in this last year. It would pump cool water right to the invert, the diffuser 14. This seemed like a doable type option, and we're planning forward on that. So they've looked at different pumps, they've found different pumps, they've looked at a list of vendors, and they've saw vendors that were able to supply this type of an operation. We're still looking at the entire operation of the pump, what it means to us, what we have to do. Those plans have not been finalized yet, but we have a good idea what has to happen. But in that period of time, contracting is still coming up with, well, just this morning came up with plans and specs on the pumps and somewhat of the scope of the project, too. This will be going out to potential vendors here about the 16th of this month, and hopefully it'll be closed around the 26th of this month. So we can award this contract and have it in place hopefully by the second week, actually probably about the third week of July, around the 14th. So that's what we're looking at right now for putting pumps, placing the generator in for the operation of this proposed operation for this summer.
Okay, thank you. Just to follow up, I think at the Fitterwig and in previous discussions, CORE was not certain whether they were going to wait and try to procure these as an emergency if and when we needed them. And after discussions with contracting, we've decided to go ahead with a standby, get them on site. And you can see that process is still taking considerable time, but we feel we're getting what we need. So,
no, we think that's a smart decision because contracting can sometimes be problematic. So,
exactly.
Yeah, no, we appreciate that. I'm happy to hear you guys are going to have them on site ready to use. Great, thanks.
Got to be on site ready to use. Let's hope that week, please.
Any other comments? If not, let's move on to the add-on, the Ice Harbor Hazardous Material Storage. Trevor?
Yeah. Okay, well, I had an inspection. Let me know if you guys can't hear my phone. Hopefully,
we can hear you fine.
Than folks in the room there. So I had an inspection at Ice Harbor on Tuesday, and one of the things I wanted to look at and address was I've had comments from Dave Benner and Mark Plummer over the years on the storage of certain construction materials and hazardous waste under the Ice Harbor ladder. And so for folks there to visualize who haven't seen that, it's basically a parking lot that's probably 20 to 30 feet above the tail race, and the ladder comes up from the tail race sort of along the parking lot, and then it makes a 180 degree turn, and then it heads up to the forebay. And where it makes that 180 degree turn and starts heading up, it makes a real convenient storage area to get people, construction workers, project folks, and their equipment out of the rain. And so what they've done over the years is stored various materials, steel, construction equipment, lots of metal, tools, those sorts of things underneath that ladder. So not only is it underneath the ladder, but it's also adjacent to the ladder that comes up from the tail race. And it's even actually above the water level of that. So just keep that in mind And so what I saw on Tuesday was a lot of hazardous material being stored there. There's probably, I'd say, 50 to 100 50-gallon drums full of who knows what, but it has some pretty nasty labels on them. There's tanks of gasoline, diesel, propane, 50 bottles of oxyacetylene tanks, all stored right there. And so that seems like an issue to me. And then there's also construction equipment like metal chop saws, sandblaster, and a large tractor. And so there, with those, there's a noise concern. Just looking up, you know, kind of online, how much noise does that make? Because I have a metal chop saw myself, and it's probably the noisiest piece of equipment I've ever operated. And it actually makes 5 times more noise than a chainsaw. So if you could imagine somebody operating a chainsaw continuously next to a ladder several times a day, that's kind of what's going on there. And a sandblaster is actually louder than a heavy metal band. So that's right there, too. And so I'm kind of looking at that stuff, and I'm thinking, man, is this really appropriate for us to store and use, you know, these kind of materials and equipment right next to a fish ladder that's our primary passage ladder at Ice Harbor Dam and the Snake River? So if something were to go wrong, if we were to have a toxic spill and it would go in that ladder, we could have a serious problem. Not to mention the fact that, you know, that noise, who knows what that's been doing over the years to some fish that are going through there. I'm sure not all fish, I'm sure some fish endure, but maybe some fish, you know, that has an effect, and I'm not sure about that. I can't say anything about that. I just know that a conservative approach would be to not have it there. So, and I know Mark Plummer's been trying to deal with this for years now, supporting, you know, removing this and putting it somewhere else, and Ken Phone also supports that. Dave Benner supports removing this equipment and waste from that area, and so do I. So now we have four passage bios saying that this is a bad thing, and I'm asking the Corps now what do you plan to do about it? And then another add-on to that is Ken Phone mentioned something about a document that recently designated that area as the hazardous material holding area. And so I would like to confirm if that is the case. And if it is, I'd like to know why we didn't have a chance to review that. So that's a start. But what do you think?
You know, this kind of came up late in the day yesterday. I was already traveling down here. The history of my knowledge on this was the annual report out of the Fish Passage Center that identified the noise issue. We followed that up already through FPOM. We went to the OPM, asked what the path forward was. So that was a couple months ago. The path forward was is that they are in process looking for a different area to store the equipment that makes that noise so that it would not be there. The hazardous material is, to me, a new issue, although I am aware that our Chief of Natural Resource Management and our ECC, Environmental Compliance Coordinator, did make a site visit. And Mark, you're on the phone. Do you want to tell us what the result of their site visit was?
When Jason come out for the site visit, Dan?
No, it would be Don Redmond and Lonnie Mettler.
Oh, I wasn't here when they made their site visit. I was here when Jason come out from our, what section is he, the environmental compliance section. I think the result of that was a memo from their section stating that they also had recommended that removing those things from underneath the ladder, especially since it should be considered critical habitat, that you know, that's where the adult fish are getting past the dam, and certainly the most used ladder is the South Fish Ladder. So I wasn't here when Mr. Redmond was out here. I don't know how I missed that day, but I was here with Jason, and the memo did result from that visit with Jason.
So it's an operations responsibility, and Jason's in planning. Planning deals with issues where we're planning future actions. So Don Redmond would be the ECC responsible for this. Greg, you were in the office when this came in yesterday. Do you have any other insights in terms of what the response from Lonnie Mettler and or Don Redman was, or do we need to kick this out to the next meeting?
I say kick it out and find something.
Okay. With that, we'll kick it out till the next meeting and come back with the fact of you recognizing, Trevor, that we have had some interaction at the ops level on this issue.
Yeah, and I just want to say one thing. Don Redman did have the state of Washington come out and do an inspection of the site, the hazardous materials type inspection. And it did pass the requirements. Basically, they contain the etc., stuff like that. So there's no problem on site of storage.
Hold on, Greg. They're looking at that from the perspective of how we store hazardous material. I'm looking at it from the perspective of fish. So there's two separate things there.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring that up that, you know, it's stored appropriately in case there's a spill, there's containment for it, too. I want you to understand that. But in that document where Ice Harbor did designate that as a storage thing, it's an internal document. That's all it is. It's an SOP. So we'll worry about that more, I guess.
I think...
That's all I got to say about this too, the subject right now.
Okay, so I think our path forward to start addressing the hazardous will be to come back to the next meeting and talk about the containment that is on site, and so we'll take discussions from there. Then we'll come back. Does anybody have any other comments?
I would also be interested in the timeline and for removing. I mean, I would like to see that construction equipment stop being used immediately and start being moved. That's something that they can start working on right now. And if not, then I'd like to see a timeline for how they're moving forward with that. So maybe get that also at the next meeting.
Yeah, the other thing I was thinking, I heard about containment, but I don't. What Trevor mentioned were some explosives, potential explosive materials. I don't know what would happen if those gas cylinders went off for whatever reason. But right underneath the ladder is probably not the right place for something that could blow up.
Yeah, and that does happen. I mean, clothing shops are famous for people putting a little bit of oil on the threads of a acetylene tank or oxyacetylene tank and putting it back on, and just having that happen will cause those things to go off and explode and destroy buildings.
You've got equipment that you're running that could run sparks. Some cutoff saws typically spark pretty good. So,
you know, we're assuming that stuff is, yeah. I think what we need to do is identify a little bit more of the time frames, when it's used, when the stuff will be moved. We'll come back and have some further discussion based on where the project is moving, because what we had was that this was temporary the last time that we inquired, and that the equipment, all the noise stuff, was going to be moved, that there was a path forward within the project. Now, there again, you have to understand that they may or may not have some other limitations that we're not aware of at this point. So we will have more discussion at the next meeting.
Okay.
All right, thanks,
Trevor.
Okay,
I guess it's for some of us who don't get to Ice Harbor very often, I know the exact place you guys are talking about right now. I have seen it, and it does concern me, too. But when we have that discussion at the next FPOM, a few pictures to walk us through the area would be helpful.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Dave. Moving on to Portland's updates. We've got a couple of Bonneville ones right off the bat. Our Unit 11.
This is Rosanna. Can we talk about the temperature stuff for McNary here, or were we going to delay that?
I think we were going to put that in the FPP because you were asking for some FPP change, and so that's later in the agenda.
Ah, there it is. Okay, thank you.
Sorry, go ahead, Vern.
Mark
has left the conference.
All right, so back to the updates. Looks like Ben stepped out for a minute, so let's go to 324, John Day's arc flash requirements.
has left the conference.
Miro. Dun, 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 dun. Arc Flash Miro.
John Day?
Yes.
Arc Flash, inconclusive, still pending. That's all I can tell you. The good news is there is no further impact from that original 10 minutes at midnight. So the issue is safety, so it's being really looked at closely. I guess at first I thought it was maybe based on what I heard. It was a minor misunderstanding, but there is some merit to the whole thing. So it's been still pending.
Any questions for Merrill? If not, let's do the smoke monitoring facility Chinook Morts at John Day.
Okay, everybody is familiar with the MFR. It happened over the last weekend in May, and this is the PNNL collected fish. Almost 50 in the course of 3 days, and they were only hatchery. The clipped fish, so it's a subset. I understand. I don't know any. I'm not aware of any official confirmation. Came supposedly from one of them, hatchery or one of them hatchery, whatever that location. Somebody was making some connection with one of them, but what Pacific State told me that has happened this time of year, and they have some. Thinking that it could be related to total dissolved gas, high supersaturation this time of year with the weekend fish with BKD and stuff, but I have no idea. So what PNNL did, they stopped tagging since they were getting those morts, and that goes, of course, against their permit. And until the situation cleared, mortality stopped, and they completed the spring component. That's all it.
We don't know what happened. It sounds like oxygen was good, and there weren't any problems with flow through and all that, so it does point to the fact that there were some problematic fish. All the whales to say about that.
Any other comments? Okay, let's jump back up to Bonneville Unit 11 update, Ben.
December.
Good news, Ben.
December.
December.
2014.
No. December.
2014.
You're way in the future. 2014, we're going to hold you to this.
It's only 6 months.
All right, how about Unit 13 priority? Said FPOM's okay with moving up in priority, but wanted to revisit it in June.
Project had concerns about Unit 13, so you wanted to move it up in priority, and FPOM last month was tentatively okay with it.
Was that the first on, last off? They didn't want to be turning off and on?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They wanted to keep it running.
Right.
Yep. It's okay to continue?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Right now, I think it's everything Powerhouse 2 and 4 units of Powerhouse 1 is what's running.
So
it's not, it doesn't technically matter at the moment.
All right, let's move on to our next update, which is the pinniped program. Bjorn is here from the fish field unit and has provided a summary handout. Unfortunately, for those on the phone, you'll have to get it off of the website. Bjorn?
Did everyone get a handout? Okay, there it goes. It's moving. So just want to let everyone know this is preliminary 2014 data. We just finished data collection on like May 30th. So these numbers, you know, don't cite them basically. First graph, I just have everything numbered. Number one is annual pinniped abundance over the entire time frame of the project, 2002 to 2014. Basically, stellars are still persisting at a high number. We had 65 individuals in 2014. California sea lions had an increase. We were able to count 71 different individual sea lions. 2014 was marked with a large increase in new California sea lions into the Bonneville population. Looking at graph number two, the daily average abundance over all the years of the project. Basically, 2014 was similar to recent years where we had more stellar sea lions present on average than California sea lions. Graph number three is the daily abundance just for 2014. So looking at how many individuals we had on the project each day by doing point counts. You can see from the graph, like most years, California sea lions are mainly present during the April and May months, while stellar sea lions are more prevalent throughout the entire January through May timeframe. We had a maximum of 41 stellars on a couple different days during the height of the spring Chinook run, and a maximum of 27 California sea lions also during the spring Chinook run. Graph number four, looking at salmonid predation over all the years of the project. There's been an increase in recent years. This is, just to say, this data is the expanded estimate, so we haven't quite worked through all the data as of yet for this year.
One quick question, how far downstream does this cover?
Just the three main tail races, so basically from concrete to about a half a mile down from the dam. So basically our viewing areas from where we're staying on the dam with binoculars. So it's a relatively small area.
Yeah, I just wanted to make that point.
Okay, thank you. So the expanded estimate only takes into account the days we missed, like weekends and holidays. So it's a pretty low number. So the numbers are going to change by the time the final report comes out. So for 2014, our expanded estimate is 3,450 salmonids consumed. That falls right around the 12-year average of 3,341. Basically, it's going to come out to be around 2% of the spring passage of salmonids. And that also falls right within the normal range that we get of 2.4%. Look at graph number five. Salmonid predation for 2014 compared with the 2002 through 2013 average. 2013 was marked by a much more concentrated predation period compared to the average. You can see the orange line. We had a lot of really high days of predation. I guess one day we had 140 salmonids consumed. Then number six is going to be our sturgeon predation over all the years of the project. Sturgeon predation has dropped quite a bit in recent years. Our expanded estimate for 2014 is 108 sturgeon consumed, which is the lowest since we first noted stellars eating sturgeon at Bonneville Dam. Number seven, next page. Just going to touch on the branding and removals of sea lions at Bonneville Dam. So this is the work that's performed by ODFNW and WDFNW. So in 2014, 15 California sea lions were euthanized at Bonneville Dam. Also, 21 California sea lions were branded right at the dam, which is the maximum that they've ever done there, which is kind of good for our identification process. It looks like, well, unfortunately, in 2014, there was not any funding to brand stellar sea lions at Bonneville. So that's going to make it more difficult for us to keep track of individuals in the future. And lastly, we do some fall data collection at Bonneville. So stellar sea lions are starting to show up after the breeding season. So they're leaving in May, and they're starting to show up as early as August. So we started doing some kind of piecemeal data collection in the fall months. And kind of what we've seen by looking at some numbers between 2011 and 2013 is that 2013 showed basically more pinnipeds present in the tail race, less sturgeon predation and more salmonid predation. And it's also, at this point, it's pretty common to see like a dozen or 15 stellar sea lions hauled out right in the tail race of Bonneville Dam during the fall months. So it's kind of a big change to what it used to be. And that's all I have.
Anybody have any questions for Bjorn?
Just one quick one. So all these measurements are based on observed activity?
Yes.
Thanks.
Hey, Bjorn, any speculation why such a drop in the sturgeon consumption? Are they just running out of sturgeon or what?
I don't really have a guess, basically, at this point.
Any population assessments on sturgeon?
Yeah, we do population assessments annually on sturgeon in the Lower Columbia River. Catch rates of oversized sturgeon are definitely increasing lower in the system. So I wouldn't guess that necessarily less sturgeon predation at the concrete is necessarily a good thing. It just means there's probably fewer fish left. Now, we were doing oversized tagging sort of in the tail race. That's moved up to downstream of the Dalles Dam, so we don't have that activity happening there annually anymore. But
I think when you look at graph number 3, the daily abundance, you look at the orange line of stellar sea lions, it's kind of interesting that, I mean, there were stellar sea lions around, you know, January, February, into March. And then they just kind of drop off right around March 21st down to like zero, which would have been unheard of for these most recent years. And we know from CritFix boat surveys that there are stellars that are hauling out on Foca Rock, but they kind of just like almost gave up on Bonneville at that point. So there was like a week where we had just nothing going on. So it seems like they were hunting for quite a long time, and then a bunch of them just stopped even bother trying to even show up in the tail race and find fish.
All right, thanks, Bjorn. We're going to have an add-on, which was the Bradford Island. You had you wanted to have Bradford Island dewatering early.
Yeah, we're not scheduled to dewater Bradford at all this year, but Natalie Richards has the potential to spend $6 million, I believe, on Bradford Island repairs, updates, whatever you want to call them, mods. And we were asked to come up to three most critical items there that, per their criteria, were items that might not make it to 2017, as well as the ones that have the most potential for impact. So we prioritized fish valve 1-1, fish valve 3-7, and the 3-7 conduit that geysers through the ground. So between those three, they want to get back in there and have folks look at it to be able to basically bid on those items and scope out work that would occur next year when it's dewatered. So they really only need a few days, but I would ask for probably 2 weeks for us to be able to get it dewatered, get them in there, and then get it watered back up. And then we'd say the plan would be to stay on schedule for Washington Shore, mostly for Cascades Island, which needs the most attention. So I just wanted to see if folks, I mean, obviously it's got benefit, but it's taken it out of service for 2 weeks in November.
What 2 weeks?
Whenever. I mean, I would guess that we would potentially want to have it overlap with the bridge work that we're coordinating, but it's whenever, really. We just picked November because we don't want to impact what we need to do specifically in Cascades Island.
Are you going to put together a coordination?
I can. I just kind of wanted to get feedback a little bit before doing that. But
Jeff, you're talking like last 2 weeks of November. So this, just to get us straight, this is to do some exploratory work prior to taking this down next year for the actual work.
Get a bid.
Correct.
And it can't be done later in the season when they might.
It could be. I suppose it could be.
Washington Shore's out until when?
End of February. We just figured with the amount of stuff we have in Cascades Island, because it hasn't been out
in 4 years, so we haven't had a choice. It's missed the cycle of maintenance.
Yeah, and no, I agree with that. That needs to go.
We want to deal with that, and we also have a couple diffusers in Washington Shore that need to be dealt with. B diffusers primarily.
Right.
Well, B and A for that matter, but we just figured that time would be taken up, so that's why we're asking for November, but it's not, it doesn't have to be November.
I got a comment over here from a construction standpoint.
Sure.
With the bridge work, doing it in November would save a lot of costs with containment and with just the contractor's accessibility to the bridge and underneath the bridge. There are several spalling concrete spalls underneath the bridge that would, if the bridge were dewatered, that would save a lot of money in accessing under the bridge. So that would be super helpful for us just to do it in November. So if you could put some sort of, I don't know, whenever you get an okay from that or not okay, that would be outstanding just from construction.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure.
Remind me, when are you taking Washington Shore down? Is that going to be December 15th?
Yeah.
Let's see, at this time of year.
It should be the first.
No, it'll be the first.
The first, that's right.
First of December, yeah.
The only thing we might do is basically when you do this, make sure Powerhouse 1 is
down.
Yeah, make sure Powerhouse 1 is last priority. Make sure Powerhouse 2 is running, do last 2 weeks, write up a change form, we'll take a look at it, but I think that could work.
Okay.
Yeah.
Close. You got to jump.
That's the only question.
Say June 11th.
December.
31st.
Wait. So, Ben, it sounds like put a coordination form together requesting those 2 weeks and run it through the process here at FBOM. And hopefully that'll work well with the bridge work and get good bids and get some work done on that Bradford Island.
Yeah.
$1 million worth of work is something
we can't pass up.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the first thing we're going to add, so that's kind of wonder where that's a Portland District Fairway type issue that we don't get anymore, I guess. Yeah. There's no Portland District Fairway.
Who runs that now?
I'm not even sure there's anybody left in the shop over there, is there?
Well, John. Mike's last day is tomorrow. Sean is going
tomorrow.
Back.
Tomorrow? Is he even going to be in tomorrow?
I don't know.
I think John's the last guy standing.
Actually, you know who's taking over, don't you?
Who's that?
Dr. Wertheimer.
Wertheimer?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, he's in Mike's position for detail. Detail.
He's acting.
So.
Mike's position, that didn't help us any. Who's taking over Brad?
Well, I don't know. It's.
Who's the coordinator of Fairway for Portland District?
Oh, that's me.
So when's the next meeting? When are we going to hear about this Natalie stuff?
That was a great segue right into 3.3.
Well, before you get there, we have one more update, and that's the Dalles video work that John Dalen's proposing.
And there's one more after that, too. I'd like to hear about trunnion pins and wire ropes.
I'll just talk offline about that.
All right.
Because there's nothing going on right there.
Unfunded forever list.
I'll just point at Bob.
That's a lot.
Wire ropes. We're not. Well, let's talk about the John Day North Ladder Fish County.
John Day.
Not John Day, the Dalles.
I work with Bob Cordy. Could we like to go to more video at the Dalles North? Already we do all our winter video everywhere, winter counting everywhere by video. And we do all the night counting we do by video around the basin, the state of Oregon. Pretty much all the counting they do is video, the tribes video, PDs video. It's not that we want to just follow these guys' lead, but at some of our counting stations, it seems like video would be good. That would work well for us. I think we'd save a few bucks. But when we look through video at our fish, we don't get as good a view of the fish as when we look directly at them. So the idea for us is to improve the quality of our video. And that comes down to better cameras and better lighting. So what Bob and I are thinking about at the Dallas North is how we can improve the lighting situation. And we've got some simple ideas. To start with, we want to paint the count station a really dark color. And a few little things like that. But then after that, we get into issues that concern you guys, FPOM. We really should cover the floor with something nice and light, like a big Teflon panel, or a piece of plate metal that's got a nice Teflon coating to make it slick, to keep the algae down, and to better reflect the light that we put into the counting slot, helping us see the fish. And so we've got to get your input on that. And then after that, we need to add more light to the counting slot there. And counting slots everywhere if we expand this. We're looking around adding light from inside the counting station is not working very well, especially when we go with infrared light. There's a lot of reflection. When we use infrared lights, they reflect off the glass a lot, and they seem to be the infrared lights absorbed by the glass a lot. So,
hey, John. So it sounds, what's going on is we have some improvements we're thinking about to improve video, and John Day North is probably the first place that we're, not John Day, the Dallas North is the first place that we're thinking about. What does FPOM think about putting together a little packet saying these are the concepts and...
Well, first you're talking about going away from visual counts
right.
to video count, it sounds like to me, and because of that you need... better lighting, better cameras, better visibility.
Right. This
which,
is this
all
is
of which
the first.
Could affect fish passage. So I think we need to talk about what those effects might be and what the value is of the data in the first place, and whether or not it should be just pursued by human counters instead, maintain the program as it is. So there are several aspects of this. You know, the value of the data, there's also the potential impact on fish, and we've talked about this before, especially about adding more lighting to these count windows, and I think every time we talk about it, we decide we don't want to do that. So, but John's talking about infrared, which is a different approach, and outside of the window, it sounds like something that you've got infrared panels that actually go far projected into the ladder from outside of the count station
right.
itself, so you can get better coverage there, and that makes sense.
Right.
But that sounds like money to me, because now we've got to figure out how to modify the light panels. And may not be much, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, what would be good is if we could replace a lot of the regular lights with infrared.
Right. Yeah, I'm good with that. Sort of. I don't know. Tom and I talked about this yesterday, about what fish see in terms of infrared light, and I did a quick internet search and looked through my files and came up with not much. For cell monitor responses to infrared light, but certainly there are some impacts of some species. And I also found that, well, it doesn't really matter to this, but in the case of eggs, the infrared actually kills them. So there are some, you know, some issues there that I don't think it's a slam dunk. What do you think about that?
Okay, well, I propose we put something together and maybe bring it back to FBOM, get it out there, give you a chance to read it, because really the intent is
to... What's the cost savings, too?
Yeah, and it's also to improve our video counting
that overall,
we do overall. Right.
Yeah, I understand that. That means not just John Day North, but everywhere that we count it, the winter.
The Dallas, I keep saying. We're talking the Dallas, not John Day, sorry.
Well, I'm going to John Day now, because that's what you started with, so what can I say?
Yeah, but was this also going to be just kind of a prototype that we would look at and decide whether as a year from now, well, a year and a half from now, we'll be again out soliciting for this? And one of the things, I think, John, when I talked to you, made a visit to Bonneville, you guys were going to try to prototype somewhere and really flush out the potential of video. And that sounds like what you're doing here, which would be beneficial to a number of our sites if it really works. And so I would... really like to see them have the opportunity to try this. I think it has some good potential for us in the future to be looking at elsewhere.
That argues that this would be a an evaluation with some method of evaluating, but we have so few fish in North Adels that I guess if we had spill to go along with
it, that would be nice.
I don't know if we wanted to go there. I think the equipment upgrade and then the ability to just see where we could find efficiencies is kind of what I was interested
in.
Well,
I'm just saying that if we're going to do this as a test, and then we're going to maybe expand to the rest of the system, that we may need some biological assessment to go along with that.
Well, that's the intent. First, it's put together what the changes are, and then come up with a study
design
to test it.
And that's probably not the best place to test it.
Well,
it's a good place to do video monitoring because you don't have many fish to look at.
Maybe that's a bad idea to test and make sure if you end up having a negative impact.
As long as you have enough animals to actually do your test on, that's the only thing.
Well, I mean, it's mostly just figuring out how well the camera's working. You're able to determine how the clarity and ability to read just by operating the camera.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that's kind of the first step.
Yeah, it's
and
you'll phased.
Yeah, you'll have a fish there to tell that. I have no problems with this. Brian Duck, we'll take a look at it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we'll move on.
That's Chris Penny, Walla Walla. Another thing you want to take a look at is have Pacific States do a review and make sure that any switches you put in doesn't interfere with the pit tag detector.
Yeah. Good point.
Sure they,
So it's just a check in.
What? All right, thanks. So we'll put something together and get it out to the region. And now let's just move on to research updates.
FGE testing, I'm happy to report that we successfully measured high flow conditions in Unit 15. That was the one that we had our flow control prototype set up in. We have no results yet. However, when we get results back, that's when we would like to schedule a Fitterwig meeting, bring everybody in, go over the results, and combine that with the other projects out there that need Fitterwig updates as well.
Any idea?
On timing?
Yeah.
No. I have to talk to Hydraulic Design, and we need to get that information from the contractor.
All the equipment out of the unit?
I believe they are done. Yeah. I believe yesterday may have been the last day of testing.
that's all I had, unless anybody has questions.
All right. That leads us into the RCC update. Dun, dun,
dun, dun. Most exciting part of the meeting.
Random number
generator. About 3.3.2, we skip it.
September, read it.
Yeah, so are we playing bingo?
Yes.
I've got 332.
Okay. Okay, good. Any others? Okay. Lower Granite yesterday, 95. 5-day forecast down to 83. And 10 days down to 64. Ooh. At McNary, yesterday's average 280. 5-day forecast down to 265. 10 days, 247. Bonneville yesterday, 285. 5-day forecast, 275. And 10-day forecast, 257. And just an update on the McNary PSWs. They were closed on the 9th as scheduled and removed from service, and the spill pattern resumed normal on June 11th. So,
awesome. All good. Thank you, Lisa. So, Nathan, I've got you slotted for a bunch of lamprey updates.
Yes.
Take it away.
I'll just start off just kind of generally talking about lamprey passage at Bonneville this season. The fish have shown up early, maybe a couple weeks earlier than sort of typical, but the runs have been really strong. There's several research projects that are ongoing along with tribal translocation, and the trapping efforts have been really successful this year, so that researchers are getting their fish. Two of the tribes have already got their targeted collections at Bonneville for translocation. So, in general, things are pretty good this year.
Hey, Nathan, can I ask you a question there?
Sure.
So, translocation, when they're captured, are they taken wherever they're going, or are you holding them?
The tribes do the collection for translocation, right? So that's their project. I can just speak to you in generally about it. They typically are held over a single season and then released the following spring.
Okay, thank you.
So they're checking up for ripeness. And then specifically I have a couple of things to coordinate, 3.5.2 and 3.5.3. The Watching Shore LFS LPS, they would like to start. This is something that was coordinated last season, but last season was kind of a bust. So back again this season, the researchers there would like to test attraction flows. They're looking for the best flows for moving lamprey through the system. And they control the attraction flows by adjusting a butterfly valve to the supply water. And really, what they can do is they can set the percent that valve is open or closed. The actual CFS and velocities vary a little bit through the system depending on tail water. So I can give you kind of some general ideas about that. But I have form to pass out that I didn't get to Tammy on time, so I apologize for that. So the current situation is the plume structure's been up and running. They've had the valve set at 40% open. That generates about 23 CFS moving through the system. And what they've what they're proposing to do is to go to a high-low treatment over a 24-hour period, and then a combination of high at night, low day, low night. Low day, high night. So four treatments. And currently they're hoping to do 60% open for the high treatment and then 30% open for the low treatment. That's based on some entrained air testing that we did previously to look at bubbles coming out the entrance of the flume structure, which is also the entrance to the north downstream entrance at Bonneville. So we're looking for concurrence or not on that, which can happen next week. I think the form I might have put close the business Monday, but it looks like the electrician who actually will program the PLC, he's on vacation all week this week. And so we wouldn't really need that until probably Wednesday of next week. So I can provide you some more information on that if that form's not enough. I think I also emailed Tammy the kind of scheduled treatments, and there's some more information in the packet that Chris Caudill sent me that should be available electronically from Tammy. Any questions about traction flow testing at the Bonneville Lamprey flow structure?
Nathan,
you have to wait and read it, Nathan.
The issue is going to be the bubbles, the bubbling of that, you know, and how much we see at the entrance. And I've seen that. It can look pretty bad. But I know Steve Schlinker went out and looked at that. And I don't know if they adjusted anything or not to try to limit the amount of air that's entrained with that system. So I guess that's really what it's going to come down to, is we don't want to see a lot of bubbles being entrained into the entrance area from the Lamprey entrance.
I guess it's a question, because when they did the work this winter there, they've had extra time to get some of that stuff taken care of. Have they done a test run to see?
Yeah.
So what they have done is they've ran it from, you know, starting at zero, increasing by 10% open increments all the way to 100. We've got some video of that and still pictures as well. And what you do see is as you get to the 70% open, you start noticing bubbles coming
out. Yeah, I think what's too much is the question.
Right.
So I think you've mentioned in here that you would reduce it if you saw too much, but what's that? I mean, what's too much? Any is kind of too much as far as I'm concerned, but that depends on how broad that distributes across the entrance area. If it's just a little bit of like one side, I'm not worried about it, but it might be something that we need to take a look at.
Yeah, I can try to post a video that we collected during those increments. I'm not sure how I can share it.
Well, let me know when you're going to do this, and I'll come out and look at it.
Yeah.
Well, the test has already been done.
I mean, you're going to start doing this work, though. You're going to do this.
When's the treatment start?
Yeah.
Well, we can turn it to 60% anytime that you can come out.
Yeah. Well, I'll be there next week.
I doesn't have to wait for the test.
Wednesday, and I'll be there next week on Friday, so...
We're hoping to start before that, if possible, because it runs hot.
Well, I guess what I would say is, yeah, I'm okay with doing it, but let's fine-tune that, our eyeballs.
Yeah, that's
what we think is too much.
I talked to Chris Caudill about that. He said, okay, well, you know, as tailwater changes, the amount of entrained air could change as well.
That's true.
So that's one thing that they just kind of qualitatively we noted. At a higher tailwater, the entrained air tends to come out of the LFS earlier on along the sidewall rather than propagating all the way through the system to the entrance. So as tailwater drops, we could notice that. What Caudill suggested was, well, then at that point, we could drop the treatment a percent open from 60% to, let's say, 50%, for example.
Right.
If that cured the problem, then the lower treatment becomes half of that. And he was okay adjusting that, you know, during the season as we needed to. So this is something that we can coordinate with the project bios to watch. Obviously, the researchers themselves will be watching it.
Yes, and if I understand this correctly, you basically said at 70% open is when you start to see entrained air, and you've set it now at 60%, so you're theoretically just below that threshold?
Right.
Okay.
Get out there and look at it. So next Wednesday, you want to start the test, and that's potential for having, Gary, you said you're going to be out there Wednesday.
Yeah, I'll be out there Wednesday.
And maybe you can plan for that to get to the 60% and then maybe look at it even higher to 70. As a tentative plan.
Yeah. I mean, without having.
Yeah, you got to look at it.
Been able to think about it and have this in front of us. It's just.
This is exactly what was coordinated last year. I guess that's.
You've got to make a call though on what's too much. And that's something that I think we need to agree on.
Okay.
What that is.
So then I have two questions now. The first one is, you coordinated it last year. Was there any data that came out of it that described what you found?
So last year ended up being a pretty big bust as far as that whole system goes.
Parts just coordinated it.
Okay. It didn't work.
Yeah, it's shaking, right?
Shaking.
Yeah, right. It broke. I remember all this good stuff.
Shaking.
There's a lot of entrained air.
And also you have a duration here from June to for September. So what's your plan there to continuously alter the opening?
Yeah, there's actually an entire, you know, study design laid out. So that every 24-hour period, 24-hour block of time, there would be a different treatment applied.
You will have all that information in your inbox.
I think the critical thing here is going to be later in the season when you get into the low tailwaters, the 150 KCFS river flow type situation, and fish start piling in to that side of the river, you know, large numbers of fish start passing through the Washington Shore Ladder. That's where critical point.
UofI has a draft report out for last year's work. There may be some information in there. I don't believe they found anything concerning with RT. You're talking about RT of salmon, adult salmon?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, I don't know if they actually assessed that or not, what the, you know, the block design was for the study, how long it went, and whether they actually focused on that entrance for that.
That was part of the objective, was to look at the LFS.
And it was, but was the study going on with the bubbles? And
that I don't know. I have to check dates.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect the entrance itself to be a problem. I'm sure that showed nothing, but if we had a bubble curtain set up on the NDE, that could be a problem. So,
do we have those dates?
For last year's operation?
Yeah, for when that was occurring.
I'd have to get back and look at it.
Okay.
Well, yeah, there's maybe some data there.
Yeah, there might be.
Okay, more to come on that.
All right, let's get to the Serpentine Weirs, Bradford Island.
How many fish do we have over the
microphone?
How many fish have passed this year?
I just have the daytime and night. Well, I haven't started nighttime counting yet. So just the daytime count, so just over 5,000.
Through the structures or just the dam overall?
That's window passage only. Okay. So Bradford Island and Washington Shore windows daytime. Probably double it for nighttime.
What about the new structures?
Yeah, I can tell you they're passing fish, the flume structure in particular. The highest night of capture so far has been 48 fish. Low nights are like 5. Typically, it bounces around 15 to 20. Sometimes it's 26. So it's variable. Yeah. But, you know, relative to last year, it's a smashing success.
Yeah, it is.
Zero to this.
20. All right, Nathan, how about the Bradford Island Weirs?
Serpentine Weirs. Just a quick background.
Cameras.
A packet that should have came out with the rest of the F-Palm material from University of Idaho. The background is that serpentine sections of ladders are notoriously difficult passage spots for lamprey. They were designed for adult salmonids. However, lamprey have different swimming ability set and scope, and it's hard for them to get through there. So some of the problems with counting lamprey at the windows are a lot of back and forth at the windows themselves. This could be related to their inability to get through the upstream serpentine weir. What Chris Caudill's proposed and what we're funding this research for is to get some video at Bradford Island. So that they can actually try to see what is going on, how they're having difficulty, which will help us try to modify or improve passage in the future. This had been coordinated previously, but what we didn't have was some of these pictures of the actual camera structures and sort of the size of those, and that's what Chris wanted to make sure everybody got a chance to see before this went forward. So I believe Gary has looked at this already. Does anyone else have any questions about packet? Are you seeing it for the first time?
No, we had a similar discussion earlier this year about how they mount the cameras around the serpentine.
We did, and they modified the counting structure, or the mounting structure, to my satisfaction anyway. So.
Yep. So as long as they do it like that, I'm fine.
Yep. Yep. Looking at the Bonneville project folks to keep an eye on it.
We will.
All right, let's move up to 351 McNary Lamprey entrance vibration issues. Do you have an update?
The update is that there's a PDT that's still working it. Carl wasn't able to join, but he just said we would provide a better update next month. So they're out there actively working on it. They don't have a long-term solution. So
still,
we need to kick it out. Yeah, so we'll have to come back. I think they've eliminated it. They don't have a long-term fix.
Tension on it.
Yeah.
So did they get the camera down? I think they were going to try to put that down yesterday, was it?
We have the other, and I was going to wait for FPP. We have the other request, B because we think that we have.
Can I interrupt here? I saw an F-POM notice last night, or MLC last night, on putting the camera down there and taking a look at the stuff. It's up for your review.
It's not related to the vibration issue. It's related to the fact that there's debris that may be clogging the ability to raise elements of this for operation for lamprey and then close them again for salmonids. And so, yeah, when we get down here in FPP, we may ask for a little more comment.
Okay, so as far as lamprey counts, you probably already gave those, Nathan. Do you have anything more to give?
No.
All right. And that leads us into 3-6, our avian task group. Ian?
Okay. So we had a meeting, and we have some minutes that we were looking to get approved. Tammy was generous enough to attend the meeting and pass those out. We had avian plans that were updated by three projects, Bonneville, the Dalles, and Ice Harbor all updated their plans and trigger information. So at this point, I would ask that if anybody has any comments or concerns that they want to talk about today, this would be an appropriate time. Otherwise, you know, we need them in writing, because our path forward then is to have a new appendix for the fish passage plan.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to get a little more time to review those minutes since I hadn't.
Okay.
Too many things going on after I got back from vacation. The one thing I did notice in going through all the weekly reports the other day was that the tables look good, but what concerns me is that we're counting birds in several different ways. You know, daily average, instantaneous. The daily average one at Granite kind of concerned me a bit. So I think we still need to fine-tune that, what those tables represent, because that is quite a bit different from somebody's maximum count. We had maximum count, we had the count, which is whatever it is when the person looked, and then we have a daily average count. And I know we talked about that a bit, but I thought we'd kind of standardize that. And if there's one thing that should be standardized, I think that should be it. I mean, the number that's in the table should be similar from dam to dam to dam to dam. So that's the only thing I saw that kind of concerned me a little bit.
Okay, so maybe what we can do is have another, after you have time to review minutes and or these updates, it might be appropriate to have another meeting and just talk about things like this, places where we need to become more consistent.
I mean, it looks like things are working pretty good out there. I'm a little surprised by some of the numbers I saw in the Snake River, and also it's high numbers, and I was surprised at some of the low numbers I saw in the Columbia, so especially at McNary. So it looks like the work that they're doing out there is working.
Yeah, I think we still, and Carl would have to verify this, you know, we saw more birds when the bulk of the spring run was going out, but they were effectively using the tools, both of which were new, both the boat hazing and lethal take.
Yeah.
And my understanding is that we actually ran out of capability for cormorants throughout our whole area for lethal take. So that'll be something that we'll likely try to address before next year.
Good.
Okay. Good.
Thanks, Ian. Oh, and one other thing, just to add to that, Carl's mentioned several times that he's going to be looking at additional hazing methods. I think he was talking about some sound. And if he's, you know, going to do that, he said in June, so we're in June. Maybe in July he can report on what he found.
Yes, he can. He actually had some folks on Monday out at the project, and just as a brief on that, Technologies International, and Nathan was there as well, started the meeting with something that was a little surprising, I think, to all the staff, and that was basically that infrasound sound technology doesn't work on feeding birds. It has not been effective. And so that was good information. I felt, you know, they were straightforward. Their path forward is that they're looking at other ways where they would use different audible deterrents than what we presently have on site. So at McNary, we have a lot of calls and a lot of different
distress calls.
And they have a linear transducer technology that it would also have to go through quite a bit of scrutiny to be able to be implemented at the project. And I guess concern here is that we have a lot, me at district, we have a lot of problems at McNary, and if what we did this year was adequate, I am asking the chief of ops to oversee that we contain the amount of new things we try out there if we have an effective system in place put those resources to higher priority items.
I was going to say, it looked to me like what you were doing is working pretty well, so you may not even need to go down those other avenues.
Okay, so that...
Yeah, I would agree with that answer.
Was the infrasound even tried at McNary?
No.
No.
So, I mean, and they... you know, I think the anticipation was is they were going to come with the presentation and potentially, you know, put some stuff in the field. But instead, what they came with was wanting to kind of look at the site and come up with what they might propose. They brought three individuals. One of them was an engineer that actually built some equipment called a linear transducer. And they talked a lot about using these with audible sound that humans couldn't necessarily detect, but we didn't I didn't get a warm and fuzzy that it was something that from a HSS would necessarily pass for all the people we have working on site. But it would be a spotlight approach where you could take it out into the tail race and have, but this is in the audible range again, and you could have kind of focused zones where you might try it.
Right.
That said, you know, it's always going to be good to have more tools for the toolbox. So I don't think there's not a shutdown of trying to find more information, but at this point, there is kind of a try to clamp down on trying every new thing at McNary if we have an effective system in place, because we've already close to doubled our cost in 16 with the boat hazing and the lethal take, and there are higher priorities, particularly for some of the funds. You know, the adult ladders need a lot of, are going to need things, and I think as long as we can adequately address the juveniles, if we have something like this as a tool for the toolbox, you know, assuming we start to see ourselves drifting away from being effective, sure, you know, we're always looking for good tools.
Careful.
We can discuss these in our task group.
Yeah.
I would.
So we can have the update to the task group, Gary. How's that sound?
Yep.
All right.
Yeah, have that meeting after the July.
And we will review the minutes for approval after people have had another chance.
Right. So we'll do that in July. Yeah. How about July? Have an Avian group meeting.
Sure. Okay.
Sure.
Down after F
bomb.
Okay. Fair enough. As far as the critical infrastructure, is Ken's got a replacement, and that's going to be assigned to that?
No, that's a lost position.
Okay.
But the only update there, and I think we gave that maybe, was that we have a new MMIP, Major Maintenance Improvement Program plan,
mm-hmm.
and that is going to take the place, and I think what we're going to be bringing forward is just what we've gotten from projects, and so we kicked this out to bring forward the information that Ken gathered so that we weren't in conflict with something that our maintenance group was doing. He was starting to get into that, and that wasn't flying very well. So we backed off. He left that in place out there, and you know, I think if there's any bios that still had more information to update, then I guess we'll update this, and then we can distribute it.
Okay. All righty. So 3.8 BPA updates. You got anything?
Nothing new.
Nothing new.
Why even have you
run the there is one potentially new thing. It's not necessarily mine. It's the transformer work. T11 at Bonneville is getting moved to September, October.
We have an MOC on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. It's
talk
coming.
About that in a bit.
Hopefully we'll coordinate of the other things that were probably coordinated around that I'm not aware of yet. But that moving that may have other implications. I'll update next month.
All right, that leads us into...
Hey, I'm sorry, Vern, but if Scott was saying anything important, it was very, very difficult to hear it. So if there's something critical we should know, please relay it.
Okay, there wasn't anything critical, nothing important.
They're just going to shut off spill here in a month. So.
Okay.
No, sorry if you can't hear. Everybody's using their microphones. It's just...
No, I understand. I just wanted to make sure we didn't miss something important.
No, we're going to talk about that T11 line at Bonneville here in Section 7, but we're going to move on to the Dalles East Ladder exit, buffer and booms. Bob's got some
buffer and boom,
tough
Bob's
booms.
Buffer and boom. So attached to your agenda is this nice aerial view of the Dalles East Ladder. There's two issues that I want to talk about with this view. One is the red line on this map is where we're proposing to put in a permanent oil boom.
Red line. Is that my red line?
Thank you for that red line, Gary. I was a little technically challenged.
Did you get copyright?
Oh, I didn't put that on there. Shoot, sorry.
You didn't put credits on the bottom?
Anyway, this is where we're proposing to put a permanent oil boom in front of the East Ladder exit. Right now there is nothing out there, and in past years we've had this plan that if there's a spill upriver, we have a response team. So basically we have a boom laying out on the deck that is ready to deploy when there's a spill, but realistically speaking, it's not going to happen in time. We'll never get that out there in time. If it's on a weekend or if it's during the night or whatever, it's just not going to happen. And not to mention, not all spills we know are coming. John Day lost a little oil, it was a month ago, and the control rooms weren't talking. And so we didn't know it was coming. So realistically speaking, to have a response team to put a boom out there in time, it's not going to happen. And so we're proposing to put a permanent oil boom. Now Bonneville has a similar boom, or actually has the same thing that we're proposing to use in front of here, and they have it at the, you have it at the Navlock and some other areas as well, yeah. And so what it's composed of, and I put that picture in the, attached to the agenda as well of what that looks like, but it's just basically small floats with like a rubber curtain that goes down about a foot.
It's about a foot under the surface?
About a foot, yeah. It comes in one or two feet, and we'd go with 1 foot. That's what I'm thinking right now.
And that's the same thing that's below the Navlock, the old Navlock at Bonneville?
Yeah, yellow and black.
Yeah, yeah, that's it.
And a Navlock in there in conjunction with all the log booms outside the fish exits.
Right. But we don't have these particular, we just have log booms there, right?
No, we've got the oil boom.
Is there an oil boom in there too?
You don't hardly notice it.
Yeah, I don't see it.
Outside of the log boom.
But you do inspections?
You see the log well. Did you notice it?
Hell no.
He doesn't do inspection.
I don't do the inspection.
You're out there too. No, I see a log boom. In fact, I have pictures of it. All I see is a log boom. Ah. You don't see this.
So anyways, that's what we're proposing. So before we write the $12,000 check, I want to make sure F-POM's okay with it. Thumbs up.
Sounds like Gary gets a chunk of that for his design work.
Yeah.
We'll make sure we get
some. We'll give him a mipper to go to Mississippi.
Ooh, in August. That's a great favorite. That's a great favorite.
Unfortunately.
No, but
August, yeah,
it looks good. Go for it.
Yep.
Okay. So part two of that is the green semicircle there. We need some clarification. In the spring, when the spring Chinook fishermen come out there and fish along this bank, they get as close as they can to the east fish exit, which I can understand why. We've made some efforts here in the past to try to keep them back a little bit. We made some changes to the signage that's up on the bank just because it wasn't clear, and they were just coming right up to the exit basically and dropping their lures right in front of the exit, and so we were trying to keep them back there. And so we moved some signs out and made sure that the delineation of the boat restricted zone, which is on this map in the hash line, is very clear, and that way they don't have any confusion as far as where they can go with their boat. But the confusion is, how close can they actually get to an exit? Now, ODFW has regs that say 200 feet from a fish ladder exit or entrance, and that's the green semicircle on this map. That's a 200 foot boundary. However, this exit is not in Oregon; it's in Washington, and Washington doesn't have anything specified as far as the distance to the exit. So, if it came to a point where a fisherman decided to just go in and try to fish, we might have some trouble in actually getting a citation that would stick, aside from just entering the BRZ. So I guess what I'm looking for is some kind of clarification as to what do we go by? Do we go by the 200 foot? Do we go by the 100 foot in the fish passage plan, or do we just leave it up in the air for Washington?
I think the 100 is the minimum, and then it's the question of do you move it out to 200 or not is the question. And I'm looking to Noah if you guys have any.
No, I think this is a Washington. I mean, where's the Washington rep?
Where's the BRZ line?
The BRZ line, the BRZ is that the hash lines on there on the map.
Oh, sorry. Bob, you said we have 100 foot in the FPP in our requirement.
We have 100 foot for, I mean, it doesn't specifically say fishing.
That doesn't say fishing. That's for construction activities, or maintenance.
Yeah,
that's for the core, really.
Harassment.
I don't see how you can apply that to the public. That's the hard part. I mean, you can for the BRZ, but outside the BRZ, you're kind of.
Have you talked to anybody from the state?
We don't have anything.
We have in the past. I had OSP out there. This is before we actually realized that the Washington-Oregon line is to the east of the exit. But we had OSP out there, and this is before we moved the signs for the BRZ, and they basically said, and we had fishermen right in front of us, right in front of the exit, and they said, well, we're not even going to bother writing a citation because your sign is sitting right here, and they're just lining up the sign, and so it'll never stick.
It wouldn't. No, it's the state of Washington. We need to talk to the state of Washington. Why don't they have criteria similar to Oregon?
And there may be. I haven't had any luck finding it.
And then, I don't know. Rosanna or Charlie would be the one.
Charlie would be the one that has to do that.
Yeah,
I have no clue.
Right? Not. It's not your job. That Charlie would be the person to talk to. I guess
Cindy.
Okay.
Cindy, yeah.
But I mean that needs to be raised.
There's some efforts going on to try to get these kinds of rules consistent around the fisheries on the main stem. I'm not sure what status they're in right now, but there's dialogues going on between various enforcement parties and jurisdictions because that's recognized to be a problem. And so we will check and see if there's any information on how those are progressing.
Okay, thank you.
Bob, do you have any bird wires around there?
No. Should we put some in?
I'll just take them down.
It's worked in other places.
Not that well. Usually they just get cut down.
You get a lot of lures.
Bob, lures.
All right, Bob. Anything else, Bob?
That's it.
Thanks Bob. Number five is Bonneville Ops update on our operation. We got our coordination memo finalized last time and implemented it that day, I believe. So what happened? The good, the bad, the ugly.
I think we did it last Monday. Is that right, Lisa?
Yeah, at 11:05 on the 2nd.
So, unfortunately, like we kind of talked about before, implementing it had a challenge. We came in Monday to no computers, so we had no way to know that we'd hit the trigger over the weekend. So in this case, it wasn't that big a deal. It was probably 3 hours or 4 hours later than it would have been. But seemed fine. We implemented it, and then, pretty instantly got calls from the SMF the next day saying that descaling was up.
Yep.
Not altogether surprising, really. So there's a little dialogue back and forth amongst folks, but in general, I think it was fine. It was easily implemented. Hopefully had some benefit for adults. And it's still that way. Well, it's not that way anymore just because we don't need it flow-wise, but
yeah.
We never switch back, I should say.
So right now, the second powerhouse is at the mid-range?
Mm-hmm. And the question actually I got from operations was, per the FPP, they feel like they're bound to the mid-range, even if they wanted to go to the low end of 1%. And their question was, is that what we intended?
Yeah, I think we need to have a maybe another discussion about how we work the backside of this flow, because I'm not real happy with the way I read it. It would require us to stay at the mid-range and then run powerhouse one up to the 1% or beyond before we go back to powerhouse two, which is not a bad thing maybe right now, but as we get further into the season, it will cause us to run the first powerhouse in a partial powerhouse operation mode when we probably shouldn't be. We probably should move that flow back over to powerhouse two and shut powerhouse one down so we don't have just a few units feeding fish in the tail race and get better egress conditions. And I think that I tried to get a hold of Dean yesterday and we just couldn't cross messages, but what I wanted to look at was how sub-yearling Chinook were doing when we were up at the upper end of 1%. But I think the mortality and descaling rates were pretty low at that point.
I believe they were. Just a couple of days.
And there were still some sockeye in there, which were driving up the overall rates. But I think when you just isolate sub-yearlings, the conditions of those fish look pretty good. So as we get into the bulk of the run being sub-yearling, it may be better to go back to the upper end of 1% at powerhouse 2 and limit the operation at powerhouse 1, which, as we know, doesn't have any bypass system. We've got a sluice way, but that sluice way dumps directly into the tail race right off the edge of the dam. So tail race conditions get pretty ugly when we're down to 3 or 4 units there.
Yeah, I'll need to take a look at that because I can't. I got to take a look at Brennan's data on that.
Yeah, it's balancing what we can see, yeah, which is the descaling and mortality, against what we don't see, which is the mortality that occurs in the tail race. But that's not a kind tail race to fish.
No, but I mean,
there's a lot of predators there.
You're only talking maybe a swing of 15K, so we're
right.
Just trying to figure.
Yeah, there's a point where it makes a difference, and there's a point where it doesn't. Right now, it doesn't make a difference.
No, I'm just trying to figure out how we're going to make that cutoff, because if it's like it's 15K, so you put. You could get down
one
to
unit.
One unit less. If you still got two units on, is it better to have one unit or two? I don't know.
Two units, yeah.
Maybe go two unit minimum?
Yeah, so there's a point there where it's going to be like July, and then we're going to say, hey, wait a minute, this isn't making sense anymore.
Yep.
And was the intent to hold it at the mid-range?
Well, that's...
Do they have the flexibility to go to the low end so they're not flipping machines on
them
as frequently?
You want to be able to use the low end.
Low end of 1% of powerhouse, too.
Right.
Right.
It was a range. It wasn't a 50.
Yeah, you got. I
it
think
was a range.
There is a range of, I think, 13 to 15 KCFS, whichever megawatts that works out.
But it is within the. It does say within the 1% mid range. That's a pretty narrow band. That's not low end all the way to upper end of mid. It's
I know,
like Tom said, a couple of K.
Yep.
But why did we make it that tight?
Well, it's for concerns. We've had concerns with the low end of 1% as well.
Gary doesn't like the low end.
But, you know, we have data, too, so it's worth a discussion.
Yep.
Okay.
Where should we discuss it?
Your office.
You want to have another subcommittee?
Chairman Lors?
Lors, can you call a meeting next week?
Let's see.
Right after FPAT.
I'm just trying to think if we're having the TMT next week. We probably will. I'd either say Monday afternoon or Tuesday. Afternoon, what works best for people?
Tuesday works best for me.
Okay.
Not
next week. All right. Well, we can shoot for the week after, because I think we're going to have enough flows for the next week or two to make this not
so critical. That week, 23rd or 24th.
What do we do, Wednesday afternoon after TMT? So Scott will be around for that.
The 25th of...
Yeah.
Okay.
You have a call?
Yeah, we'll try. Yeah, 2 weeks. So not next Wednesday, Wednesday after. We'll take a look. See if we don't have TMT, we'll have it at say 9:30, 10 o'clock. If we do have TMT, we'll do it at 11.
Yeah, anytime.
Okay. Okay with me. We'll take a look. See what's happened at TMT.
Okay.
Hopefully
so
not
you'll send out an email.
I'll send an email.
Send it to TMT.
Yeah, send something out, Tom, because I'm only picking up half the conversation here, and I'm not available on the 24th.
Well, that's why we're having it on the 25th. So, because we knew you were
not available on the 25th either.
Then I don't know what to tell you.
That's going to be such a good day for a meeting.
I'm not doodle pulling this. I'll send out a couple dates, and people are going to have to take a look at them. And if you can make it, make it. You don't, you don't. And then we'll discuss it. We'll have a talk at subcommittee. We'll send out some thoughts, and people can react at what comes out of the subcommittee.
Tom, do a doodle pull.
Like monkeys, I will.
Do you want conference call or in person?
I will set up a meeting room, and people who want to show up can show up. If ever not, people just call.
Fair enough.
Done and done.
Done, done, done.
See how it's done? It's like, that was 30 seconds.
All right.
Boom.
So let's go to item 6, which is the Oregon Fish and Wildlife's request to use the AFF. Eric?
Essentially, you brought a few folks to talk about that. Why don't I just let them dive right into what they're proposing? There's been discussion about this activity, just a broad overview. It's similar to what's occurred already in the last couple of years with Washington. So, with that.
Right. So, we are in the second year of a release mortality study for coho tangle nets. 2013 was the first year we did that. Control fish in 2013 were sort of piggybacked with Washington's post-release mortality study from beach and purse seines. They are done with that study. They've wrapped that up. We need at least one more year, possibly two, for the coho mortality study. We're proposing to work in the AFF to gather those fish, tag, transport them downstream, and release. Compare those rates to the detection rates of the fish we capture and release in our experimental gear. We're talking about most likely October 1 to October 15, a little bit of, I guess, requested swap around the edges, for lack of a better term, just to deal with potential temperatures or other issues.
Well, you know, we do have Kritvik and University of Idaho doing core-funded research in that lab, and you know what I would say is whatever occurs in that lab can't inhibit core-funded research. It also needs to be safe for fish and personnel as well. What we did a few years ago with WDFW puts into question safety for fish and personnel, and we're going to have a detailed discussion on how that trap should operate for this additional work so people can work together safely and accomplish all of our objectives. You know, I suggest ODF&W work with the University of Idaho and Kritvik, and we need a detailed proposal on how this would work, including, you know, are we proposing to do it at the same time that Kritvik and U of I are in the lab? Would you want to operate in the lab following their sample day? Or are we talking about additional trap hours, things of that sort?
I guess we're making the assumption that the trap would be operated for all purposes the same amount of time. So you're not asking for additional trapping time. You're just asking to be in there when the other folks are running the trap. So that is an important issue. I mean, from what I see, it's 20, you're talking September through October, 600 coho. You're planning to adhere to the trapping protocols, and that I assumed you would be piggybacking onto the other activities that are going on in there as Washington did.
That's correct. And I'm all about safety for people and fish as well.
And that's something we should probably discuss is, conducting this activity at the same time actually the best method here for fish and personnel safety?
So, John,
can it wait till next year?
No.
No.
Can't wait till next year.
Why?
This is related to the governor's objective to monitor fisheries in the lower river, and because of that, it's a high-profile thing in the state of Oregon specifically. And the information is important now, and it's been the type of information that's been requested by the region for quite a few years, so we think now's the right time. I think what I'd love, can we get together and decide on a meeting very soon between all the groups?
Yeah, I think that would be a good idea.
To talk this through, because we clearly need to do this year. We would like to coordinate it in a way that it works best for all involved without making any waves within the actual sampling protocol within the AFF. So if we could maybe get everybody together really soon, set up a meeting time, and talk through that stuff, that'd be very good for us.
Yeah, I've tried to get hold of University of Idaho. Yesterday was the only day I was in this week, but I haven't gotten a hold of them to talk to them about it. I really want to hear their perspective.
If we put out a doodle poll or something like that, and you provide us with the folks you would like on that list, would that work for trying to put something together right away?
I think that'd be a good idea.
Okay.
Could Tom organize a doodle poll?
No.
Yeah.
Tom. No. The guy you need to talk to in our shop is the big man back there.
The big man.
Big John. He kind of runs our crew for the AFF. So we are also in support of we're balancing the fence on this. Because I would love to, my button don't work, so now it's working, yay! So, long and short is, we support the work, but also we understand the Corps' position, and our work is also needs to get done. This is important stuff, but we need to make sure it doesn't impact the other cities going on. However, if you guys can make that all work, we'll support it, but we're going to let our guys make sure it can all work out and everyone doesn't get in everyone's way. So, however you can best get that done. I would suggest a meeting sooner rather than later, because October happens quickly. So,
yeah, that would be great if we could put that together, get together, and work those things out. Again, this is a 3-week deal, 600 coho, one species. So, it seems to me there's flexibility. That's a good thing. I appreciate you guys going there.
Yeah, I think the meeting should occur next week.
From an O&M standpoint, you're looking for concurrence. Is that meeting going to be the point of concurrence, or are you
that meeting
back?
Will not be the point of concurrence. That meeting will be the development of the methods that would want to use in the AFF.
So this would come back again then, at least either in July or something, as a notice before July for concurrence.
Yeah, I assume we would, ODFW would have a detailed proposal that would be sent to FPOM for review and then comment.
Okay. Can I get the list at some point in time today of people you want to have there, or can you get that there or send it to me?
Yeah, we'll get that to you. Thank you.
The only thing I'd like to add to that, and this is kind of beside the point, but we've asked for a report on this work from Washington, mainly from Washington, for quite a while now, and haven't seen anything you're talking about getting the data out as soon as you can, but we have not seen any reports. And we did get a one-page thing from the state of Washington, but we never did get an annual report or a final report. Is there one out there that you guys know of? Is there any reports that would...
Are you talking about a report of the...
Of the work,
the
reserves,
itself?
The results, yes.
I don't think there's a 2013 final report out yet, but there was
for
a
11?
Previous one.
Oh, there was?
Yeah,
okay.
Your representatives within USU Oregon Harvest have it.
Okay, so I can talk to
them,
Peter.
Yeah, talk to Jeremy.
Or Jeremy.
Got it, yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Anything else?
participant.
Yeah, Gary, so I think there's a draft out too being reviewed at this point.
We just haven't seen it.
We have coordination.
The newer one. Yeah, and again, it's Washington, so it makes it a little difficult for us to invite
it. I was putting that down here.
Okay. If somebody gets that report, can they get it to Tammy to send out to the group?
It's a report about the information that's being provided about the study. Why wouldn't it go to everybody?
We just haven't been able to get a copy of any of them over the years.
Yeah, I think so. Of course, it's Washington's report again. So.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about McNary SMF next or wait?
Actually, the fish pump camera, and it can be whenever.
Okay. All right, well, let's move on to seven coordination forums. First one is the AWS excavation at the Dells.
John Day.
The Dells.
No, it is.
The Dells.
We talked about this one at the last month's FPALM. And
you got pushed back?
What?
You pushed it back?
Yeah, you know, we're looking at November.
Yeah, you're done.
Geotech can't get a contract put together in time to do early August, so we're looking at November.
Okay.
Yeah, there's one question I had on that, and that was to get down to the fourth, fifth, whatever, large paragraph down there, and you guys are saying something to the effect that the recording equipment will be used to monitor the work and may be used as a reference for this and other projects that may impact fish. What does that mean?
That was some wishful thinking, I think, by engineers. I thought you had, John, you had said that wasn't going to happen.
He did.
I believe we talked about potentially monitoring to see if there's any impacts to fish. You know, if we've got radio tags in the water, but this duration is going to be so short that it's not really going to be there.
What I'm concerned of is that it sounded like this could be used as a model for impacts for future use and other noisy work in the future. And I'm thinking, wait a minute.
I don't think so.
We're not going to set a standard with this.
No.
Okay.
Who said they're going to set a standard?
Well, it's just the way it reads. Oh, okay. Maybe used as reference for this and other projects that may impact fish. Right? That implies to me that it's intended to be used in the future.
Okay, it will not be.
Yeah, cross that off.
Okay.
Yeah, it should be eliminated.
Redact.
All right, any other comments on that?
No.
Okay. Let's move to the Bradford Island.
So, can we approve it?
All right.
It's going to be pushed back to November.
I know it's going to be approved.
Yes, approved for November.
All right.
The next one is the bridge overlay work at Bradford Island. Hopefully that'll get coordinated with the same outage of the dewatering. So there's going to be an updated MOC coming. However, if you have any questions, we can probably field some of the engineering parts of it. Because Karina. That is correct. Yeah, that's correct still. Well, Ben's going to see if he can get that outage.
The Bradford Island ladder outage, right?
Yeah, so.
Last 2 weeks in November. So
add on to it. That's just another.
Right. But is there any issues with the existing?
No.
Bill, you got any issues with that? Gotcha.
He's smart enough. He doesn't deal with Bono.
All right, so we're good to go.
Thank you, guys.
And then the next one is, where is Ben?
He ran away.
The T11, T12 outages at Bonneville.
Oh, I'll take that one.
Hey,
Tammy,
T11.
T11? Yeah, we're going to go over your change form.
I've been coordinating with Natalie on that.
It's, I think, back to what we originally had coordinated a year and a half ago.
Then I'm back to my year and a half ago statement that it's fine.
No, it's not quite there, though.
Oh, good grief.
Instead of September 8th, they want to start a week earlier, September 2nd.
Oh, boy, that's a problem.
It's much better than the middle of August that they were pushing for.
No, or the end of July that was scheduled for.
After September 1, you're fine.
All right, so if you looked at the change form, it moves both T11 for 2014, T12 for 2015, and it schedules T11 for 2016. You're okay with all three of those?
Mm-hmm. As long as they're after September.
No, they're in September.
I said, well, I'm saying start of September. After summer spills over, okay? There you go.
Can we make this a problem?
Would you like a bigger molehill?
Okay.
Keep moving.
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, so the last one that isn't on the agenda is the McNary fish pump interruption to allow camera inspection of the new lamprey structure at SFE at McNary. This is what Greg spoke about earlier, was sent out yesterday. They're basically looking at next Wednesday or Thursday for a one-hour drop the amount of the fish pumps, go in there with the camera, take a look, see if they can find that there's some debris clogging it, et cetera, and then have a path to go forward.
Okay. Yeah, no, I sent Greg a okie dokie on this one. I said if you wanted to do it earlier, it would be better.
Yeah, the time of the day is the only issue.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep. I just said earlier in the week, get it done sooner, because we seem to be in a bit of a lull right now.
Yeah.
So,
soccer, everything.
That's why I would say do it sooner rather than later.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Anybody else have any other contrary? Okay, looks like we're good.
Where's Doug?
Changing the elevation. All righty.
Yeah, we could give the update that next week we intend to change the elevation of the Little Goose Weir, because following the FOP, that would be when we would do it. We would hit the trigger, I believe, on Friday based on projections. And so Monday then would be the day that we have stated in the fish operations plan that we would adjust the height. And so that is firmed up, and that is scheduled and will occur, unless we would run into some wind or something that would otherwise affect us. And with that, I think we could keep moving, and the pending change forms, first one we've already talked about, the second one, Little Goose 001, draft and development. Lisa, is that something?
Well, that was a placeholder. This came up during that whole lovely little min-gen conversation that we had, that Little Goose Unit 5 has actually got a restricted operating range. It's been there since 2012, but it was new.
Speaker.
Essentially, Unit 5 has a restricted operation similar to Unit 1. It's not a fixed blade issue. I think it's more of a cavitation issue. So considering that we call other units out in terms of their abilities to operate within the 1% range, we thought it appropriate to add Unit 5 as well, so that it's not a surprise. It doesn't really have any impact on MinGen, because we never really operate Unit 5 at MinGen. But anyway, just for being fully transparent, and that. So that was just a placeholder. There hasn't been anybody tasked with it. I'll probably do it. But so that's essentially what that's going to be about. Are there any questions or concerns? Or is this not necessary?
Latterly appreciate transparency.
So you might as well go forward with putting together what you're planning, and then we can vet it at that time.
I'll do.
So we have one other one. Rosanna Mensick is on the phone. I've had a couple emails and or calls from Rosanna in the last few days. I believe she's also communicated directly with Gary Fredericks of NIMS. And she is requesting that we look at a new FPP change form for some of the elements that are in Appendix J currently, specific to McNary, JFF, and sampling at water temperatures greater than 70 degrees. So, Rosanna, are you on the phone?
I am. I'm still here.
Would you like to brief us on what your recommendations might be to point us in the direction of development?
Well, my first thought is we're looking at 3.4.1 personnel will obtain daily average water temperatures from the Corps website. I don't understand the purpose of doing that, and that website is no longer even functional. So
I couldn't get on it.
I don't understand why we even have that in there.
There's nothing.
There. A ghost? It just says error.
So would you like? What would you like to say in place of that? We'll obtain daily.
Can we eliminate that altogether? I don't understand the purpose of having that in there.
Yeah, but in place of it, you want to have a location and method for measuring temperature. So
the reason
put in there?
The reason it was in there was it was something that all the managers could have a source to go look at of where people were collecting the data from and using as their compliance point.
Understand.
And it was just a public resource. But
yeah, and it's working for some projects, but it was not
for
others for McNary. So.
Is this
so
something that TMT routinely is putting up as part of the TDG program?
It's
not facility temperatures, but it'll be average river temperatures, and maybe that would be the better place to be.
Just pick a spot. That's all I'm hearing.
We could easily update the link to a TDG link that does put out daily river temperatures.
But the TDG is doing a...
It has a string.
The Forbay or what?
Yeah, it is the Forbay.
It wasn't the string, though. It's actually at the monitoring site. TDG is, and that's not a good...
Nope.
That is not a good spot to monitor for this purpose.
Unless you don't want to monitor for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that too.
Okay. So you guys favor eliminating it then? Or
Not eliminate. I just say we just need to pick a location that Rosanna's going to use as her compliance point. And once we figure that out, that's all I can.
Yeah, I'm okay with... I think Rosanna should make the recommendation, and I'm good with... unless we think it somehow would... harm fish, and I'm sure she wouldn't do that anyway. I think we're good with that. So we just need
I have all my temperature probes. I have 36 temperature probes that I download daily, and now we're back to the question of how do I get that information to the managers in a timely manner?
No, I think what I'm thinking is you mentioned getting it either from the collection channel or from something downstream of that, and I think you just need to mention what you're going to do, how you're going to do it. I don't care to see it.
No.
I'm not going to check up on you at all.
Right.
No, and honestly, what we could do if we want to see is how, because we should have some of that old data, McNary. Take a look at the student compliance point, see if it varies much from the old point. If it doesn't, then I'm fine and dandy.
You're good. Yeah, and I would be good too. So, Roseanne, it's kind of in your balls in your court to pick a spot and pick a method and then... it would be a replacement in the Fish Passage Plan, Appendix J for 341.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the reason I'm not as worried about McNary is because we do have so many temperature probes there to collect a bunch of data. Some of these projects we do not have that extensive of a temperature monitoring system.
Right.
So McNary's kind of...
Yeah,
well,
I'm not talking about changing everybody.
Exactly.
Just McNary.
Okay. you see, and then they have down in... 3.4.5, they're going to use the sample holding tank temperature. I mean,
why not
use the sample holding tank then point?
If that works, that's great. Those two things don't seem to make much sense. Well, it says that because it says the online data are unavailable. If that's true, then you fall back to the other. If we're not going to use the online data, then that can change too. There are several things that need to change in here. 3.4.2 doesn't make any sense to me because it says once we reach 70, the staff will conduct daily 24-hour index sampling every other day.
What are you doing every other day?
And what are we doing in response to 70 degrees? Because then it goes on to say that we will do 8 hours per day. Fish condition sampling, which I think we're already doing if we're doing 24-hour sampling, so I'm confused.
Yeah, so are you saying you want this cleaned up a bit?
Yeah, I want this cleaned up, and then we have a switch gate that says the switch gate selects between sample and bypass. Is that something, what are we doing there? And then we go on to the next one, which says if populations experience high mortality, then we'll go to 100 fish per day within sampling limitations. Both of those items, high mortality and sampling limitations, need to be defined, I think, at least to some degree, so we know what we're talking about there. And then I noticed further on in 3.4.10 that this thing's referring to section 412 in the McNary Dam section. Well, that has nothing to do with monitoring.
No.
So that's an incorrect link. there's several things that need to be cleaned up here, and I think we just get a change form and clean it up. But what I really want to know is, what are we going to do this year when temperature reaches 70 degrees?
Yes, and okay, so we're going to use sample holding tank temperature, which I'm fine with using that, but I'm looking at my data going, well, you know, it could be an instantaneous sample at 6:30, and then it's going to cool off at midnight, and the next day you're down below 70 again, so now you're back to sampling again. So wouldn't it be better to go with, you know, if you have that 70 degrees for two or three consistent days, then yeah, we need to look at curtailing sampling here.
Yeah. And then, okay, so I still say, Rosanna, to that you should develop a method that you want to use that makes sense.
Right.
And then run it out to the committee for discussion.
So can you initially work with Carl and or Bobby to draft some of these changes? But I didn't hear you say that you were going to follow the bottom half of 3.4.2 when you went above 70, and that was just go to 8 hours a day condition sampling. And to me, that is likely why 3.4.2 exists.
Exactly.
That is to limit the amount of sampling to something that gives you some information to track, but not be doing a lot of handling when we have the higher temperatures.
That was the
right. And see, I can give you 100 fish over the course of a 24-hour sample and only handle 100 fish. And the part of the reason for a 24-hour sample is you're going to see your greatest impact of what's happening in the forebay later in the afternoon rather than taking an 8-hour sample at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning. That isn't really going to show you what's truly happening around the facility.
But there's a lot of flexibility as to when you would take the 8-hour sample. You're going to an alternative operation, so instead of at 7 a.m. starting your sample, you could work with Carl and Bobby to come up with what time you would feel is appropriate and take that. It's obviously just for a limited duration while you maintain temperatures above 70 degrees, and then you flip back as soon as you're down to your normal operation of every other day.
Right.
Yeah,
there's a lot of stuff in here that, yeah, need to be reworded and taken another look at.
Okay, so...
Yeah, there's two things there. One is, I think, we need to determine what we're doing this year.
Yeah.
And then the second is maybe modifying that to something different. So... what I would like to do is just make sure that this reads correctly, that at once we reach 70, that we reduce the sampling effort to a fish, you know, just an injury, basically, a fish condition sample. So that needs to be clear, because that's not what it says here. How we do that, then, is another question. I don't think we're going to resolve that today. So I just want to make sure, because temperatures are rising pretty fast. We're seeing like a degree a day, and it's already 61 to 2 degrees, somewhere in that range. And so 70 might not be that far around the corner.
Yep.
So I want to make sure that we have this correctly in place before
so
that happens.
I think that there is some agreement then, at least if I'm hearing you correctly, Gary, that if we hit 70 consistently, that no one would object and everyone supports that you would go to just an 8-hour sample. When you would do that, how you would do that, can be part of this form that gets developed, but that message should be an underlying theme as you develop the form.
So I'm just going to throw out there, we should probably throw this at FPAC next Tuesday.
Okay.
Gary, that's the right place.
Yeah, did Gary and Rosanna, if you guys want to, we can set up an agenda item, just go over this real quick, get everyone's okie dokie.
Yeah, that's the right place for it.
Okay.
You're right.
Okay. Okay. Thanks.
If that works for everybody.
Yeah.
As much as I love guaranteeing myself another meeting, but.
Mm-hmm. I've got another question, if I may, on section 3.4.2. Is that 8 hours contiguous, or any 8 hours you want picked throughout the 24-hour period?
That's part of the discussion.
Part of the discussion.
Yeah, because
I didn't hear any I couldn't hear.
Yeah, we didn't have. There was no resolution. So.
FPAC next Tuesday, Dave.
So it wouldn't have to be 8 continuous hours?
No, that's what we're saying. I think we'd want to talk about that FPAC. I mean, what would make the most sense?
Let's get to what the purpose is.
Exactly.
And let that dictate what we do.
Okay.
Yeah, because the other thing, too, is daily. I'm not sure why we do that. So.
Make it ready to be fun. Every third day.
Okay.
Exactly.
All right. Thank you. We're going to 9 now. We got some updates. We're going to meet at 1 o'clock upstairs for the split flow.
Has left the conference.
Or do you want to do 12:30?
Or 12:30, we can have that discussion in a sec. July is going to be the Avian Task Group after the FBOM meeting. John's going to have a call to deal with the AFF soon. You going to set that up? Like next week.
I suggested a Super Bowl.
And
I believe that was specifically in terms of the model and coordinating.
He's talking
no,
about
AFF stuff.
Not FGE.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
AFF, I got a list right here.
Mm-hmm. And Sea Lion Task Group, I don't know if this is something we need to continue right now.
There's interest, but I don't think it's FPOM's going to be.
All right, so we'll just put that on ice.
And then put the other thing is Bonneville Ops will have a meeting. We're going to tentatively try to schedule one on the 25th. Tentatively, let's say 10:30. Because that gives me an excuse to get up TNT early.
Okay. Anybody on the phone, comments? If not, we're done here. Thanks for calling in.
I heard Bonneville Ops meeting on the 25th. Is that correct?
Correct.
Well, that's what we're generally throwing out. Tammy sent an email out. We're simply saying 10:30. I will get a room at CricFit, and we'll also get a conference call. We will send out whatever comes from that in meeting notes, and people can review, and we can discuss the next FBOM.
So you're assuming that's right after TMT?
I'm going to leave TMT if I have to. I will try not to cry.
Okay.
So, Dave, are you going to be calling in for the split flow discussion?
No, I can't today. I'm sorry.
Okay. All right. Well, have a good day.
And all you there.
So, the split flow group, we can go up there right now at 12.
David will.
Or get a lunch and come back. Or what do you want to do?
Has left the conference.
Okay. Absolutely. That's what we're doing. Gary, tell us that one. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I had a lot of things I wanted to do.